que sí, ¿sabes de qué era la carta de China?
No, está aquí, yo lo tengo la carta.
Buenos días, colegas del foro permanente. Señores delegados de gobiernos, de organismos internacionales, hermanos de organizaciones y pueblos indígenas. Procederemos ahora a tratar el tema 3 del programa, debate sobre el tema especial para el año, los pueblos indígenas, desarrollo con cultura e identidad, artículos 3 y 32 de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. El foro permanente seguirá adoptando el formato de 3 diálogos públicos sobre el tema especial. Hoy en la mañana celebraremos un diálogo con los pueblos indígenas y por la tarde lo haremos con los gobiernos. Tenemos una lista y vamos a proceder entonces a dar la palabra a las personas inscritas en la lista. Rogamos, como siempre, su generosidad en cuanto a la administración del poco tiempo que disponemos, porque buscamos que, especialmente para los pueblos indígenas, que haya una participación plena de todos nuestros delegados. El primer orador que tengo en la lista es el señor Clemente Samines Chalí, del Parlamento Indígena de América. Señor Clemente Samines, ¿está en la sala, señor Samines? Señor Samines, ¿está en la sala? Preguntamos nuevamente.
Que levante la mano.
Que levante la mano. No, no está. Entonces, vamos a dar la palabra al señor Kililulú Gora del Caucus del Pacífico. ¿Está el señor Gora? ¿Puede levantar la mano? Entonces, por favor, tiene la palabra, señor Gora.
Mr. Chairman,
tiene la palabra.
Mr. Chairman.
Señor Gora, por favor, tiene la palabra.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Dr. Kimo Armitage, and I'm the assistant professor at Kamakaua-Kolani Center for Hawaiian Studies, and I will be speaking on behalf of the Pacific Caucus at this, the 9th Forum of the Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues. Specifically, the caucus wishes to contribute to the report presented by Vicky Tauli-Korpuz on the International Group Meeting, which addressed Articles 3 and 32 of the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People to the Permanent Forum members. That was presented yesterday, April 19, 2010. As noted, the invited delegate from the Pacific Caucus was unable to attend the International Expert Group meeting. As such, the Pacific Caucus would like to highlight some findings that were discussed, as well as inform the Permanent Forum of unique problems affecting our oceanic community. First, modern development in the Pacific has usually not contributed to indigenous well-being. In fact, in most instances, it has been disastrous. Non-sustainable development practices have been evasive, ruining our environmental cycles. All throughout the Pacific, issues of chemical contamination from construction runoff, deforestation, strip mining, damage to reef ecosystems from pollution, possible groundwater contamination from development, vestiges of nuclear contamination, and the rising of sea levels from global warming have placed our landscapes in jeopardy. The Pacific Island states recognize the development models have perpetuated these cycles of dependency. A perspective from the Pacific is people-centered, rooted in the nature, especially the ocean. Indigenous people perspectives provide a direction that is holistic and comprehensive. It focuses on equity and equality as much as economy. For example, it is commonly believed that the two largest economic generators in Hawaii are tourism and the American military. Both economic mechanisms have proven disastrous to Hawaii, as development for tourism has displaced the indigenous community, and the military training with live fire bombings is destroying fragile ecosystems. Pollution of the land with depleted uranium bullets poisoning the water aquifers is impacting the health of everyone who lives in Hawaii. A similar fate awaits Guam, where 20,000 American troops and their dependents are about to retreat from Okinawa to Guam. Their arrival would destroy the reef ecosystems and monopolize the economy of our indigenous cousins. The Pacific Caucus would indeed like to commend the committee for articulating that the dominant development paradigm. Capitalism is dangerous for countries such as ours that have finite resources. However, in Hawaii, three notable indigenous technologies have contributed and sustained our populations for millennia. Irrigated cultivation fields, terrace agricultural food zones, and wild fish ponds built around river mouths. It has been proven that these non-invasive systems contribute to indigenous food sovereignty while maximizing food production using natural landscapes. These knowledge systems fed over 1 million Hawaiians pre-contact. This is in direct opposition to such invasive technologies, such as genetically modified foods, that threaten the health and cultural well-being of many Pacific indigenous peoples who have a spiritual relationship with plants. The Pacific Caucus would like to assert that technologies do not need to be attempted in grand movements. Rather, smaller contributions may also make an impact in reinscribing our knowledge systems back into the current development paradigm. As an example, there is a current public policy in Aotearoa, known to the metropole by its less spiritual name of New Zealand, that require urban public landscaping efforts to utilize indigenous flora. This seemingly small effort contributes greatly to the ecosystem because these plants already understand how to work with other indigenous plants, and these plants understand how to contribute to the water cycle. One of the greatest problems all over the Pacific is the onslaught of invasive species that have displaced native species. Indigenous economies can exist. Indigenous knowledge systems must be the source for the development model. The knowledge must be expressed through indigenous skills and traditional structures. Indigenous research should be increased at the higher education at institutions in the Pacific. And through indigenous languages in the Pacific, the education and empowerment activities should be the basis for an indigenous traditional development system. Samoa is currently looking at ways to develop markets for their indigenous medicinal plants. Tahiti is looking for ways to incorporate their knowledge of ocean systems to promote fish harvest. Toward this end, we would like to call upon all the universities of the Pacific to follow the example of the University of Hawaii that has made their strategic outcome number one, making University of Hawaii an indigenous-serving university, beginning with the service of Native Hawaiians. The Pacific Caucus strongly supports and reiterates the recommendations of the International Expert Group Meeting on Indigenous People, Development with Culture and Identity, Articles 3 and 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Specifically, to support and call for the implementation of paragraphs 19 to 60 in the report. In the upcoming Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Honolulu in 2011, the agenda can integrate instead of ignore indigenous development systems. We have this 1 year to plan in the Pacific region to promote economic exchange between indigenous people that builds healthy communities and sustainable societies. The Pacific Caucus calls on APEC to attend future sessions of the United Nations Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues. But more importantly, to make sure an indigenous policy is adapted for the Honolulu Summit and included in all future sessions of APEC. Lastly, in accordance with Article 32, we urge all Pacific governments to engage in the process of returning all indigenous lands to indigenous people, such as ceded lands to the Native Hawaiians, iwi lands to the Maori people, and traditional lands to the people of Rapa Nui. And ask that all nations in the Pacific who wish to be decolonized, such as Hawaii, be reinscribed on the United Nations list of nations to be decolonized. Thank you.
Muchas gracias, señor Gora. Volver a recordarles a los participantes en este foro que el tiempo que disponemos es bastante limitado y, por favor, les ruego observar este asunto. La próxima oradora es, es la señora Sandra Kremer, del Caucus de Mujeres. La señora Kremer está.
Alta la mano, señor.
Tiene la palabra.
Honourable Chairperson, members of the United Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, distinguished representative of Indigenous peoples, sisters and brothers here today. We are honoured to address you on our perspective on the critical theme of Indigenous peoples' development with cultural and identity. We welcome this opportunity to engage in a dialogue with the members of the Permanent Forum. As Indigenous women, we are the human embodiment of Mother Earth and as such have the responsibility of managing and protecting Earth's nurturing gifts. Our deep and invaluable traditional knowledge and worldwide views contain tools to correct global crises such as food, security, environmental sustainability, climate change, poverty, and the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. We continue to exercise our human rights to self-determination in relation to our economic, social, and cultural development, emphasising the need to respect and encourage our human rights as Indigenous people as affirmed by the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. We welcome prosperity on our communities in a holistic manner that promotes our cultural identity through sustainable development. In our worldview, prosperity results from collective partnership based on equality and protection of Mother Earth. Therefore, development projects which are based on these principles of living well and achieving prosperity must result only where free, prior and informed consent of Indigenous peoples, as affirmed in the United Nations Declaration, has been obtained. The process towards prosperity must take into account the revitalisation, recognition and promotion of traditional Indigenous ways. The knowledge of our ancestors helped to maintain and promote our cultural identities, thus strengthening in our goal global communities through a holistic approach to our obligation to Mother Earth and our common well-being. Recommendation 1. We call upon the Permanent Forum to urge states and Indigenous people to actively implement the rights of free, prior and informed consent, which promote Indigenous peoples' right to determine their priorities and strategies for the development and use of their lands, territory and resources. Further, we urge states and Indigenous people to support the traditional role of Indigenous women in mitigating the adverse environmental, economic, social, cultural and spiritual impact of unsustainable development not authorised by Indigenous people, as well as rights to refuse and require redress and reparation of unacceptable development without fear of retaliation. We urge the Permanent Forum to call upon the states and UN bodies, specialised agency, to promote the full and effective participation of Indigenous women in the development, use and management of Indigenous resources according to cultural and customary practices. This includes promoting capacity building and leadership incentives towards especially for Indigenous women. Please refer to paragraph. We recommend the Permanent Forum to urge the Human Rights Council to appoint a special rapporteur for the protection of water and water catchments areas to gather testimonies directly into Indigenous peoples of the world targeted for and impacted by the water privatisation, diversion, division, toxic contamination, dams, pollutions, non-sustainable energy development and other environmental injustices that damage water resources on which Indigenous people rely. This is necessary in order to promote the ability of Indigenous people to nurture sustainability and well-being. We call on the Permanent Forum to recommend to the Human Rights Council to mandate the expert mechanism on the rights of Indigenous people to investigate examples of and solutions to resolve repressive actions, including the use of national militaries and corporate private armies to prevent Indigenous peoples' access to our lands, territory and resources. We call upon the Permanent Forum to urge states to not acknowledge, protect, foster and support the increased capacity of Indigenous peoples' education system and languages from a holistic approach. Therefore, we call on the Permanent Forum to urge states to recognise not only the relevancy but also the validity and equality of Indigenous systems compared to those established by states as recognised by the United Nations Declaration. We call upon the Permanent Forum to encourage UN bodies and specialised agencies in states to actively promote the respect and support of cultural initiatives, including language, diversity of those living in urban settings and unrepresented or unrecognised Indigenous people. This is imperative for Indigenous peoples' cultures, survival and self-determination development. We urge the Permanent Forum to consider the outcome of the World's Peoples' Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth currently taking place in Bolivia and to express solidarity in the conference proposal of Climate Justice Tribunal. In closing, we applaud New Zealand for taking the stance of supporting the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and look forward to the future when New Zealand and remaining states adopt and implement all of the articles of the Declaration without reservation. We would also like to thank you for your time and consideration on these recommendations.
Gracias, señora Kremer. Vamos a rogarles que cuando hagan su intervención lo puedan hacerlo de manera más pausada para que la interpretación sea clara y todos podamos beneficiarnos de las exposiciones. Vamos a dar la palabra a la señora Debra Harry, que es del Caucus de América del Norte. Señora Harry. Por favor, ¿está la señora Harry? ¿Puede levantar la mano la señora? Por favor. Tiene la palabra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning to my brothers and sisters. We wish to also thank you, Mr. Chair, and congratulate you on your election as chair for the ninth session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. We look forward to working under your capable leadership. The members of the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus extends our warm greetings to the members of the United Nations Permanent Forum, member states, UN agencies, and our Indigenous brothers and sisters from throughout the world. We wish to inform the Permanent Forum that the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus held a preparatory meeting for the ninth session, which took place on March 6th and 7th in the territory of the Alexis Nakota Sioux Nation in Alberta, Canada. This meeting was jointly sponsored by the Alexis Nakota Sioux Nation, the Enoch Cree Nation, and the Confederacy of Treaty 6 First Nations. Delegates included spiritual leaders, chiefs, elders, and youth representing numerous Indigenous nations, organizations, and communities from throughout North America. Delegates adopted a report on our deliberations by consensus, and this report has been submitted to the Permanent Forum as document EC19-2010, CRP-12. Our specific recommendations for agenda item 3 are as follows. That the Permanent Forum set up a process that addresses specific violations of human rights of Indigenous peoples as a result of ecologically and culturally destructive modes of development. That the Permanent Forum take notice of increasing human rights abuses against the Athabasca Chipewyan peoples and institute an early warning and urgent action procedure to address this and related urgent human rights violations taking place in the name of development. All dialogue between Indigenous peoples and states, provinces, and corporations regarding development include an acknowledgement and discussion of Indigenous knowledge and values that are grounded in Indigenous language systems. The discussion of the issues of development have to be broad enough by agenda setting and getting expert advice to include Indigenous perspectives on traditional economies based on the ongoing relationship of Indigenous peoples to their lands and traditional territories. We request that the permanent forum promote a fuller discussion and debate regarding the difference between ecologically unsustainable patterns of economic development and Indigenous-oriented, ecologically sustainable patterns of economic development that remain mindful of the needs of future generations. We also recommend that the permanent forum ensure that water must be a focus of these discussions within the main theme of development and culture and identity. The permanent forum must also encourage public and private interests to expand beyond only considering profit as the primary motivator for development, but also consider the expense profit has had on the land, water, and Indigenous peoples. The permanent forum must be a very strong advocate for the purpose it was established, that is, to give a voice to Indigenous peoples within the complex, well-resourced, and challenging global community. This means the permanent forum must make strong recommendations in all venues in order for Indigenous peoples to ensure that the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is accepted as the minimum standard by state governments on a nation-to-nation, government-to-government basis. We also request that the permanent forum consider concepts of restorative development and support and foster development efforts that repair and heal the earth through languages and through ceremonies. In terms of a narrative discussion at the North American Indigenous Caucus meeting, the delegates noted that the International Expert Group meeting on Indigenous peoples with the theme Development with Culture and Identity should also include a fourth pillar, and that fourth pillar should focus on treaties, issues of redress, and the principles of free, prior, and informed consent, as well as the permanent sovereignty over natural resources as guiding principles to be incorporated and followed by parties, especially where conflict arises. Delegates challenged the term developed countries in the context of the North American region. Grievous human rights violations against Indigenous peoples in North America are occurring due to destructive development. Delegates were specifically alerted to the case of the Athabascan Chippewan peoples at Fort Chippewan, whose territory is currently being broken up by tar sands exploitation. And as a result, disproportionate numbers of peoples are dying from cancer and other health-related illnesses. The unchecked exploitation of tar sands is accelerated by policies of nation-state governments in North America, while their policies on Indigenous issues continue to promote termination and extinguishment. How much time do I have? Delegates further expressed concern that Canadian policies on land rights and self-government violate the right of self-determination and do not recognize the inherent rights and jurisdiction of Indigenous peoples. Delegates asserted the right of permanent sovereignty of Indigenous peoples over natural resources. Delegates expressed the need for Indigenous peoples to develop their own environmental and human health standards and Indigenous-based laws for environmental and natural resource and habitat conservation, as well as mechanisms for enforcement. Environmental laws of Indigenous peoples must be enforceable on all political jurisdictions. Delegates were further concerned that other UN processes, such as the Convention on Biological Diversity and the World Intellectual Property Organization, Intergovernmental Committee on Genetic Resources, Traditional Knowledge, and Folklore, are based on Western concepts and fail to understand Indigenous systems for the protection of biological diversity and traditional knowledge, and attempt to address these issues in a commercial context, which is contrary to Indigenous people's own aspirations. With regard to Article 45 of the Declaration, we believe that Article 45 must be applied so that Indigenous peoples can harness and implement the existing obligations of states to Indigenous peoples in their desire to help and ensure their full recognition and protection against abuses. Delegates concluded that the right to self-determination includes the right to determine their culture and to be in control of their resources and land rights. Delegates encouraged the permanent forum to stay focused on the original purpose of Article 32, and that is to have development that is rooted in Indigenous values, that promotes and strengthens Indigenous cultures, languages, worldviews, and lifeways. In closing, Mr. Chairman, the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues must ensure that all international human rights, economic, and environmental bodies and United Nations research and monitor agencies include the means to respect the health, water, ecological biodiversity, and the freedom of Indigenous peoples. Thank you for the opportunity to give these remarks.
Gracias, señora. Ahora daremos la palabra al señor Carl Hill, al jefe Carl Hill del Caucus Indígena Global. Tiene la palabra, señor Hill. Pero antes, para nuestro registro, quisiera usted mencione su nombre y el de su organización. Tiene la palabra.
Nyawe Skano Gagwego, Hajiwenta I Gyaso, Haudenosaunee. Hello, my name is Chief Carl Hill of the Haudenosaunee. On behalf of the Global Indigenous Peoples Caucus, I am presenting the opening statement at the 9th session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, April 19th through 30th, 2010. Special theme, Indigenous Peoples, Development with Culture and Identity. Articles 3 and 32 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Mr. Chairman, we want to thank you on your election to chair of the 9th session of the Permanent Forum. We look forward to working with you throughout this session, and we also welcome the news that New Zealand, also known as Aotearoa, has expressed support for the UN Declaration on Indigenous Peoples, joining the world community and expressing a commitment to advance the human rights of Indigenous peoples. We are here at the Permanent Forum to discuss Articles 3 and 32, the rights to self-determination and development contained in the Declaration. However, we are faced with the conflict between an Indigenous people's perspective and a Western perspective of, quote, development, end quote. From our perspective, no process of development is worthy of the name if the process that is being called development results in colonization and ecological destruction, and in the destruction of the cultural, economical, social, and spiritual ways of life and identities of Indigenous nations and peoples. Mega projects of development, for example, have displaced and dispossessed Indigenous peoples. From an Indigenous people's perspective, development projects must be premised on environmental and cultural sustainability that takes into account and safeguards the needs of future generations. For us, the meaning of Western models of development is found in the destructive history and legacy of colonization that has negatively impacted our nations and peoples and continually violated our human rights, both individual and collective. This is why there is a need today for restorative development by stopping further destruction and repairing and healing the earth while revitalizing and perpetuating Indigenous languages, cultures, and distinctive identities as nations and peoples, not as ethnic minorities. We hereby affirm the traditional territorial integrity and the ecological and environmental sovereignty of our nations and peoples. We celebrate and commemorate the sacred birthright and free existence of our ancestors, experienced for thousands of years before the forces of colonialism and colonization invaded our lands, territories, resources, which was the beginning of Western-based so-called development. We share in common the legacy of being nations and peoples who for millennia have evolved cultural, linguistic, and ecological diversity and sustaining life ways that are integral and inseparable aspects of the biology of Mother Earth that promotes the natural abundance and regeneration of life. As a result of the ecological knowledge and wisdom of our ancestors, understanding water and all forms of life to be relatives, our traditional lands and territories are the location of the mineral, biological, and genetic life forms that are now coveted by states and corporations, particularly for the purposes of mining and other extractive processes that have proven ruinous to our sacred lands, territories, waters, health, and cultures, including our spiritual traditions. We indigenous nations and peoples share in common the experience of having our ancestors dehumanized by the wandering and roaming populations that traveled to our traditional lands and territories from Western Europe, starting in the so-called Age of Discovery in the 15th, 16th, and later centuries. That dehumanization of our ancestors and our peoples has resulted in wrongful claims by monarchies and states of a right to dominance and territorial sovereignty over our lands and territories and over our relatives called resources. It is this legacy and its accompanying interpretive framework that has been carefully documented in the preliminary study on the doctrine of discovery presented for the 9th session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Let the world community clearly acknowledge, as we do, that dehumanization is the cause that results in the need for human rights protections. That long and dehumanizing legacy of colonialism, colonization, and forced imposition that has been directed against indigenous nations and peoples for centuries, made necessary for the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples on September 13, 2007. Despite the fact that existing human rights covenants, the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and the Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights declare that, quote, all peoples have the right of self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. The Declaration is an expression of the fundamental human rights of indigenous peoples, modeled after the above-mentioned human rights covenants. Article 3 of the Declaration states, quote, all peoples have the right to self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely promote their economic, social, and cultural development. We expect implementation of the Declaration by state governments to be a means to end the colonial framework developed by monarchies and states, and as a means to alleviate and end the continual human rights violations from which our people suffer on a daily basis. When Articles 3 and 32 are interpreted within the context of continuing colonialism and colonization, which presumes a permanent and effective framework of dominance over indigenous nations and peoples, the inevitable result of that framework is that the meaning of development from indigenous peoples' perspective is ecocide, terracide, aquacide, the destruction of flora and fauna, the poisoning of water, and the potential destruction of the fabric of life. The resulting damage goes beyond the ecosystems and environment because state and corporate models and patterns of development result in the forced relocation and displacement of indigenous nations and peoples from their traditional lands and territories, often by militarization, thereby resulting in what amounts to genocide. We are also vigilant and attentive to the concerns of climate change and recommendations emanating from the People's Global Conference on the Global Rights of Mother Earth. Given the context and issues identified above, the Indigenous Peoples Global Caucus hereby makes the recommendations. 1. To call for the immediate appointment of a special rapporteur for the protection of water and water catchment areas to gather testimony directly from Indigenous nations and communities of the world targeted for or impacted by water privatization, diversion, toxic contamination, dams, co-modification, non-sustainable energy development, and other environmental injustices that damage water sources, watersheds, and aquifers on which indigenous peoples rely for spiritual, cultural, and physical sustenance. 2. We call on the Permanent Forum to do a special investigation on the disproportionate impact of Western development projects, particularly the toxic effects of mining on indigenous women, children, elders, as well as the impacts of child labor, economic exploitation, and human trafficking. 3. We ask the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues to urge states to desist the repression and persecution of indigenous peoples and their leaders who exercise their right pursuant to the Declaration, particularly in relation to so-called development projects. 4. We call on the Permanent Forum to be vigilant and attentive to the concerns of climate change recommendations emanating from the People's Conference on the Rights of Mother Earth. 5. We call upon the Permanent Forum to convene an expert group meeting on the issue of hydraulic fracturing, otherwise known as hydrofracking, to examine the ways that indigenous peoples are being impacted or potentially impacted by hydrofracking, and report to the UNDP, the UNEP, and other appropriate UN agencies with a responsibility for environmental and human rights protections. 6. The Global Indigenous Peoples Caucus recommends that an expert group meeting be convened on the doctrine of discovery and that a comprehensive study of the doctrine be conducted by a representative from each of the 7 regions identified by the Permanent Forum, and that Tanya Ganilla Frischner be appointed to represent the North American region. 7. In accordance with the current work of the Permanent Forum to monitor the implementation of the Declaration, we ask specifically that the Permanent Forum initiate a study that also addresses indigenous peoples' perceptions and concerns that the Declaration is being manipulated, violated, and distorted in an effort to thwart its implementation. And lastly, 8, that the Permanent Forum follows through on the topic of, quote, development with culture and identity, end quote, with a study that examines indigenous models of development consistent with their cultural aspirations and worldviews. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dani To.
Muchas gracias, Jefe Gil. Ahora daremos la palabra al señor Clemente Samines Chalí, representante del Parlamento Indígena de América. Señor Samines Chalí, tiene la palabra. Señor Chalí, ¿está en la sala? Tiene la palabra.
Sí. Gracias, señor presidente. Como representante del Parlamento Indígena a nivel de América y representante de los pueblos indígenas del Congreso de Guatemala, les doy la más cordial bienvenida a todos y a todas. Buenos días, señor presidente. Para mí es un orgullo ver a alguien de la región presidir esta novena sesión del foro permanente. Les deseo éxito en su gestión. Saludo que hago extensión a los demás miembros del foro. Distinguidos delegados y delegadas de los estados miembros y agencias del sistema de la ONU. Estimado y estimadas representantes de las organizaciones indígenas, especialmente a los presidentes de diferentes organizaciones, a Waqib Keh, a Maya Visión y a los 48 cantones del departamento de Totonicapán y Sololá. El Congreso de Guatemala se caracteriza por ser multiétnica, pluricultural y plurilingüe, cuyos pueblos indígenas han sido excluidos históricamente del desarrollo cultural, social, económico que ha influido directamente en el subdesarrollo del país, donde se ha evidenciado los altos índices de pobreza, analfabetismo y mortalidad, siendo los pueblos mayas víctimas de la falta de legislación que promueve su desarrollo integral, el acuerdo sobre entidad de derechos de los pueblos indígenas da vida a las aspiraciones para que la reivindicación de modo que no sean discriminados, especialmente a la mujer indígena. Con la promulgación de la Constitución Política de la República de Guatemala en el año de 1985, a lo que va desde entonces 6 periodos legislativos, no se ha aprobado ninguna ley en beneficio de los pueblos indígenas. Es de conocimiento general de la sociedad guatemalteca que para impulsar anteproyectos de iniciativas de leyes que benefician a los pueblos indígenas han sido una tarea difícil, pues requiere de voluntad política de las partes y visión del país. En relación a todo lo anterior, la Comisión de Pueblos Indígenas en pleno, preocupados de su compromiso con los pueblos indígenas, deciden priorizar y dar seguimiento a las iniciativas de leyes con dictamen favorable presentadas entre la Dirección Legislativa durante el año 2009, en modo que el Pleno del Congreso los apruebe para que entren en vigencia durante 2010. Las iniciativas de ley que tenemos con dictamen favorable, ley de lugares sagrados de los pueblos mayas, con registro número 3835. 2. Ley de consulta a los pueblos indígenas, con registro número 4051. Ley de medios de comunicación, con registro número 4087. Ley general sobre los pueblos, ley general sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, con registro 4047. Y ley del Programa Nacional de Resarcimiento, con número registro 3551. Es lo que está viendo los legisladores del Congreso de Guatemala. Hago ver a la Comisión Internacional a nivel de América que abogan por nosotros como diputados, que es difícil de poder lograr la aprobación de estas leyes solo porque es del sector indígena de Guatemala y sin recursos. Muchas gracias, hermanos y hermanas invitados en este foro, y que el día de hoy podemos llevar en nuestros corazones el resultado de la conversión desde este foro, y me siento satisfecho de haber dialogado con muchas personalidades en este día. Y un saludo especial al embajador de Guatemala. Muchas gracias.
Gracias, señor congresista. Vamos a dar la palabra a la señora Jacqueline Cariño, que es del Caucus de los Pueblos Indígenas del Asia. Señora Cariño. ¿Está en la sala? Señora Cariño, tiene la palabra. Levante la mano la señora Cariño. Tiene la palabra. Señora Cariño.
Thank you for this opportunity to present to the Permanent Forum the major points reached by the Asia Indigenous Peoples Caucus on the theme development with culture and identity during its preparatory meeting held last March 1-3, 2010 in Baguio City, Philippines. We will be submitting a complete report of this preparatory meeting, as well as the results of a series of conferences on indigenous development in Asia. Development with culture and identity is a practice that indigenous peoples in Asia have long upheld and demanded. For us, development with identity means... For us, development with identity means that throughout the development process, indigenous peoples' rights to land, territories, and self-determination are recognized, including our right to free, prior, informed consent, for any development project affecting us. This also means that the development should address the particular needs and problems of indigenous peoples and that indigenous perspectives are considered in the formulation of government development plans. At the same time, basic social services we direly need for our genuine development, such as education and health, are at levels way below national standards and that of the general non-Indigenous population. This is a result of a long history of discrimination, marginalization, and neglect by our governments. Meanwhile, viable traditional practices and Indigenous cultures are not recognized, nor do they receive the support they deserve for their protection and perpetuation for future generations. Migration from rural to urban areas and population transfer of non-Indigenous people to Indigenous communities contribute to the weakening and disintegration of our traditional governance systems, culture, and community solidarity. It also leads often to the theft of our lands. Sadly, in most countries of Asia, development comes at a price for Indigenous peoples. Our experience with development is in the form of logging, plantations, dams, tourism, mining projects, land conversion, and the declaration of national parks and protected areas that have displaced us from our ancestral lands, destroyed our traditional livelihoods, commercialized our cultures, sold our lands to capitalist developers, eroded our Indigenous values and cultures, degraded our biodiversity, and brought on militarization, criminalization, and political repression of our Indigenous leaders and organizations. We assert that development with identity should uphold the positive Indigenous values of sustainability, collectivity, spirituality, subsistence, respect for customary law, harmony with nature, and mutual support. These core values of Indigenous peoples are necessary if we are to overcome the urgent threats of global economic crisis and climate change that we all face today. We now forward the following concrete recommendations for consideration by the Permanent Forum, Indigenous peoples, states, UN agencies, and international financial institutions. 1. Strengthen the respect for Indigenous perspectives and core values and integrate this into prevailing development models and strategies. Enhance and promote sustainable Indigenous livelihoods. Support community-driven development initiatives, technology and innovations of Indigenous peoples. 2. Strengthen the revival, documentation and transmission to younger generations of Indigenous culture, knowledge and practices. Support institutions and universities working for the preservation and transmission of the culture and traditions of Indigenous peoples. Conduct cultural exchange with and among Indigenous peoples in order to strengthen solidarity and learning among various Indigenous groups. 3. Recognize and implement the right to free prior informed consent of Indigenous communities in development and ensure their effective participation in all development projects affecting them. Develop mechanisms for efficient and credible documentation and monitoring of Indigenous people's experiences with FPIC in order to prevent further violations of FPIC processes. And for the UNPFII to take up FPIC as the theme of its next session. 4. Document case studies of good practices of development with identity, as well as violations committed against Indigenous peoples in the name of development. Establish a strong mechanism where Indigenous peoples can complain and seek justice for the violation of their rights, especially in situations where Indigenous peoples' rights have been integrated into the policies of the state, UN agencies, and intergovernmental bodies. 5. Strengthen the use of multimedia such as community radio and video for community education on development with identity and on the rights and concerns of Indigenous peoples. 6. Review laws and policies on development to be consistent with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as the overall development framework for Indigenous peoples. Recognize customary rights of Indigenous peoples, especially on land, territories, and resources. 7. Stop destruction, destructive mining operations, dams, logging concessions, and biofuel and other plantations, mega agricultural projects, especially palm oil plantations, with specific attention to the disproportionate impacts on indigenous women and children. Provide restitution and just compensation to indigenous peoples affected by development aggression and recognize the rights of indigenous peoples to own and manage our land, territories, and natural resources. 8, stop political repression and militarization of indigenous communities as these violate their rights and threaten the security, livelihoods, and development with identity of indigenous peoples. 9, ensure that any climate change-related projects on land and territories of indigenous peoples are conducted according to the principles of free, prior, and informed consent and self-determination. And finally, take urgent steps to end ethnocide of indigenous peoples, such as ethnocide of the Sui people of Cambodia, the peoples of Jharkhand, Orissa, Chhattisgarh in India, the Khao and Kalash peoples of Chitral, Pakistan, and others, resulting from modern development and migration of non-indigenous peoples into their territories. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Muchas gracias a usted. La señora Jocelyn, la señorita Jocelyn Hong Chin, que es portavoz del Caucus de Jóvenes, por favor, tiene la palabra.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairperson, and our indigenous brothers and sisters from all over the world. On behalf of the Indigenous Youth Caucus, I would like to draw your attention on several issues deeply concerned by us, the Indigenous youth. First, we firmly call for stronger and more effective measurements to protect the rights of the Mother Earth. The language in place to support the protection and our rights as protectors from the destruction of impulse development or any other impacts resulting from the exploitation of our homelands is only effective if it is upheld. Mother Earth is a living person from whom we derive and for who sustains us. If the violation against Mother Earth continue, our unique and spiritual connection with her will be lost, taking with it cultures, languages, and people so closely depend on one another. False accusations have been imposed upon indigenous peoples in terms of deforestation, desertification, and the extinction of animals and fish. We shall not be blamed for keeping our traditional way of living. It is the forces of so-called Western development that causes the relocation and displacement of indigenous peoples, along with the dispossession of our territories. The money-oriented expansions and development by the dominant society is not by any means benefiting indigenous peoples or the environment. It is a serious concern that the destruction of our lands, loss of our languages, and violation of rights is leading to ethnocide of some indigenous peoples. In addition to man-made disasters, in the past months, natural disasters have been tearing Mother Earth apart, destroying our homes and taking away precious lives. Many indigenous peoples were forced to relocate. When the reconstruction projects for the aftermath of the disasters are developed, the free, prior, and informed consent must be implied. Indigenous communities must be consulted. However, consultation must be substantive, culturally understandable, on equal footing, and mean more than just a meeting between two entities. We cannot call it a free, prior, and informed consent when a section of the indigenous peoples is co-opted and they speak on the colonizer's behalf in the consultation. The reconstruction of Mother Earth without consent of indigenous communities will impose second harms to victims, further destroying our cultures and identities. Second, the meaning of self-determination shall be further clarified. To give substance and effect to Article 3, it is necessary that state governments provide a forum for indigenous decision-making in the lawmaking process as provided for in Article 4. a critical fact we shall emphasize is that only until indigenous peoples achieve the ability to exercise our own course of our future, there is no way our people can ensure that development with culture and identity can ever be realized. And for too long, indigenous peoples have been subject to laws contrary to our customs and traditions. This has been the fight of our elders and will continue to be ours. In conclusion, the Indigenous Youth Caucus respectively offers the following recommendations. First, the adoption of the UN DRIP is only the first step. We urge the forum to push for greater implementation without reservation. We call upon our governments to uphold their commitment to UNDRIP through the actual implementation of these rights, as well as their practice. Second, we call upon UNDP and other UN agencies to implement the principle of free, prior, and informed consent and self-determination in all of their projects, including any climate mitigation or adaptation project, and to strengthen their role in influencing governments to not only create but to implement laws and policies that take into account the needs of indigenous peoples. Third, we urge governments to end the practice of undertaking development projects on lands and territories of indigenous peoples, including plantations, hydropower dams, mines, and etc., that are approved or implemented without the free, prior, and informed consent of the indigenous peoples. Forced evictions must be stopped, and governments must respect the principle of self-determination. UN agencies and governments must take urgent steps to end ethnocide of indigenous peoples. Fourth, we urge governments to create measures that will help preserve cultures in times of natural disasters and forced relocation. Thank you for giving us the floor.
Muchas gracias, señorita Hung Chin. Ahora daremos paso a la participación de organizaciones regionales. Hemos tenido la oportunidad de escuchar intervenciones de sustancia, pero también a nombre de los caucus mundiales, tanto de mujeres, pueblos indígenas, jóvenes. Y ahora pasaremos, como les decía, a escuchar las intervenciones por organización regional, y teniendo una lista larga de oradores y teniendo en cuenta que todos los presentes acá tienen el derecho de participar, vamos a limitar el tiempo de participación a 3 minutos, y cuando el orador se pase los 3 minutos vamos a cortar el uso de la palabra. Entonces ruego que tengan en consideración este dato tan importante para nuestro diálogo. Señor Tomás Huanacu Tito, de la Coordinadora Andina de las Organizaciones Indígenas Cauí, tiene la palabra. Tiene la palabra.
Jalaya, Gilata, Carlos Mamani Condori, saludo protocolar de la Coordinadora Andina, y celebra la nominación del Gilata Aymara para conducir el presente foro sobre las cuestiones indígenas. Así también saludamos al Pleno y a todos los pueblos indígenas presentes en este evento. La Coordinadora Andina es una organización regional en cuyas filas se encuentran organizaciones nacionales de pueblos indígenas de los Andes de la Via Yala. Tal es el caso de los pueblos indígenas de Colombia, de Ecuador, de Perú, de Bolivia, de Argentina, de Chile. Estamos interrelacionados también con las organizaciones de la COICA, los pueblos indígenas de la Amazonía, la SICA, la Coordinadora Indígena de Pueblos de Centroamérica. También estamos integrados con las organizaciones de mujeres de los pueblos indígenas, de los jóvenes de los pueblos indígenas y de los niños de los pueblos indígenas. Estamos acompañando a este evento y lo hemos hecho desde años pasados, pero este evento no puede ser saliva gastada, Xilata Presidente. No puede ser tiros al aire sin muchos resultados, Xilata Presidente. Hemos puesto de manifiesto con énfasis la depredación de los bienes de la Pachamama, el deshielo de los nevados de los Andes, la contaminación de las aguas por las empresas transnacionales, el envenenamiento del oxígeno, la tala de los bosques. Señor Presidente, Xilata Presidente, reiteramos que no puede quedar al vacío las manifestaciones de los pueblos indígenas, las preocupaciones de vida que tienen los pueblos indígenas. No pueden los pueblos indígenas ser perseguidos por gobiernos inclinados al imperialismo. No pueden los pueblos indígenas estar criminalizados por leyes que tapan la boca, que tapan el clamor de los pueblos indígenas. Los pueblos indígenas en Colombia están perseguidos, amedrontados, acosados, asesinados. Este foro tiene que decirle alto al gobierno de Colombia de que evite más matanza de los pueblos indígenas. Este foro tiene que decir alto al gobierno del Perú que no criminalice las movilizaciones de los pueblos indígenas. Hasta hoy se encuentra en el exilio el hermano Alberto Pisango, solo por defender los derechos de la madre tierra, solo por defender la justicia y el bien vivir de los pueblos indígenas. No pueden los pueblos indígenas del Ecuador ser disimulados en la atención de sus necesidades, necesidades fundamentales que afectan el vivir de los pueblos indígenas del Ecuador. No pueden los gobiernos, incluidos de todo el mundo, venir a decir cosas bonitas cuando en realidad están pasando violaciones contra los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Estimado hermano presidente, no pueden las Naciones Unidas por este jefe que es la Junta Internacional de Sustancias Controladas, prohibir el uso en el mate de la sagrada hoja de coca. ¿Y por qué no prohíbe la fabricación de Coca-Cola y los Pepsi-Cola? Xilata Presidente, lo decimos con el sentimiento como coordinadora andina. No tenemos tiempo para redactar, pero vamos a ofrecer a los medios una redacción compilada de lo que estamos expresando en este evento. Los tres minutos después de 500 años de sometimiento no es basta para las delegaciones de los pueblos indígenas. Celebramos, para terminar, celebramos el evento que está auspiciando el presidente de la República de Bolivia por visibilizar el modelo de vida de los pueblos indígenas, porque eso debe ser la aspiración de toda la humanidad. Jayaya Gilata, Carlos Mamani.
Jayaya, hermano Tomás, vamos a agradecer siempre a los hermanos a que ahora intervengan. Hagamos el uso de los 3 minutos que tenemos, por favor. Al señor Iván Torafín, del Asia Pacífico Indígenas Youth Network. ¿Estará el señor Torafín? Levante la mano. Por favor, tiene la palabra y sus 3 minutos. Además, vuelvo a repetir, diga su nombre y el de su organización. Necesitamos para el registro.
Inyamanak, Apu Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ay, ayugayam, magayaman, ugayam, ugayaman. I am Ivan Torafing. I belong to the Bontoc people of Cordillera, Philippines. We are collectively called Igorots. This is a statement of the Asia-Pacific Indigenous Youth Network created during the Indigenous Climate Change Connections that took place in November 14 to 20, 2009 in Bintulu, Sarawak, Malaysia, that was actively participated by 34 Indigenous youth representatives from 8 countries in Asia. The conference was organized with the objective of educating the indigenous youth about the worsening problems and the pressing issues concerning climate change, and also to empower them with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We appreciate the forum for prioritizing the theme Indigenous Development with Culture and Identity in this session. I should say the theme is particularly important for young indigenous people because the arbitrary and destructive developmental processes introduced in the indigenous people's land has impacted indigenous youth with physical, spiritual, and health impacts, while youth are always with their elders in all efforts to defend and reclaim their land and resources. Mr. Chair, allow us to express our perspectives about development. Development in this statement was understood into 2 types, the Western or rather market-based concept and the indigenous concept. The former takes the forms of infrastructure such as roads, highways, bridges, and foreign investments like mega dams, big logging concessions, and large mining industries, which cause environmental destruction and displacement of indigenous peoples from their lands. It is the mainstream and dominating idea of development. This kind of development is basically guided by the profit-oriented motives of the rich countries. On the other hand, development in the perspective of indigenous peoples is of the intangible kind. This means that development must be sustainable and respectful to culture, traditions, identity, and the collective ownership of land of indigenous peoples. And it's the main underlying principle of indigenous development. Mr. Chair, we wish to express our concerns and recommendations, and we hope that the permanent forum will take this into consideration for the concerns of indigenous youth. First, we call on states' representatives and interstate agencies such as UNESCO, UNICEF, and the UNDP to formulate policies for indigenous peoples and review existing laws and policies integrating provisions and spirits of the United Nations Declarations on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, particularly Articles 3 and 32. We call on multilateral organizations and international funding agencies such as World Bank, Asian Development Bank, International Monetary Fund, and other UN bodies to review their policies and integrate the rights of indigenous peoples as enshrined in the light of the UNDRIP. We call on governments to recognize the customary laws and collective rights of indigenous peoples over their land and resources. Also, for all states to take the initiative to review and repeal repressive laws and policies that arm state agencies and militaries to suppress indigenous communities with full immunity for their actions. We call on governments to support in the formation and implementation of programs in promoting indigenous peoples' cultural education among children and youth, and the recognition of indigenous peoples' traditional cultures and protection of their intellectual property rights and traditional knowledge. We call on all nation states and governments to truly respect and recognize the right to free, prior, and informed consent of the indigenous peoples before any development project is implemented in accordance with the United Nations Declarations on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We call on all governments and UN bodies to utilize the media to provide other alternative means for the indigenous peoples to voice out their concerns and issues with regard to the right of all people to freedom of expression. We call on international funding agencies and other UN bodies to support all initiatives to preserve and promote indigenous peoples' culture and tradition, including alternative media created by indigenous peoples. And lastly, we call on the Permanent Forum to urge upon states, UN agencies, and indigenous peoples' organizations to fully implement the recommendations of the Permanent Forum in its previous sessions to ensure indigenous youth and children's participation in all development and decision-making processes affecting their identity and cultural survival. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Agyaman na.
Ahora daremos la palabra a nuestro distinguido miembro Mike Dodson. Tiene la palabra, señor Dodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and might I congratulate you on your election to the chair of the Permanent Forum. Your leadership qualities are already evident, and I also want to express my very deep appreciation to Vicky Tauli Corpus for her 5 years of leadership and skill in leading this forum. Also, I want to especially congratulate Pamini Huster for taking on the job as rapporteur. After 5 years and one day, I'm not missing the role. Mr. Chairman, education is a critical underpinning of this special theme. In particular, the right to education in the mother tongue is fundamental to the maintenance and growth of culture and identity, and cultural and linguistic diversity. Paragraph 39 of the report of the International Expert Group meeting provides, I believe, an excellent framework for the exploration of the role that education plays to facilitate culture to facilitate development with culture and identity. The issue of bilingual learning in Indigenous languages is not only of vital interest to this theme, but also very relevant in my country at the moment in debate on education policy. Support for Indigenous languages continues to be contested at all levels of the political sphere, locally, nationally, and internationally. This is in spite of overwhelming international evidence on the importance and efficacy of mother tongue instruction in improving educational outcomes for Indigenous children. In many cases, rather than being an education-based discussion, the focus of the debate is political, social, and technical. Unfortunately, it is these concepts, rather than the pedagogical imperatives, that are driving the development, application and implementation of education policy on matters pertaining to the teaching of Indigenous languages, including choices of the language of instruction, choices of curriculum and structures of schooling. We know in this debate there are many contested issues, and further complications arise from the somewhat problematical and fluid nature of definitions relating to language and literacy teaching and acquisition. Mr. Chairman, the position paper of UNESCO, Education in a Multilingual World, aims to clarify some of the key concepts and issues that surround the debate and presents in a simplified and synthetic form the many declarations and recommendations that have made reference to issues of languages and education. The document provides an overview of key concepts of multilingual education and synthesises the international instruments, including UNESCO conventions, and finally presents a set of principles and guidelines which clarifies UNESCO's position and makes it more accessible. According to UNESCO, in 2003, there were some 20 international articles, recommendations and declarations which related directly to the rights of minority groups to access and use freely their own languages and to mother tongue learning and bilingual and multilingual education. The UNESCO position paper synthesised the relevant international instruments to arrive at three principles which many of us are familiar with. The UNESCO paper, Mr. Chairman, was produced prior to the General Assembly's adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and it does not include the related articles in the Declaration, nor, I note, other international instruments produced since then. Articles 13 and 14 of the Declaration specifically relate to the rights of Indigenous peoples and our languages, and the right to access education provided in Indigenous languages. Article 3 forms the basis of the theme we are discussing and applies to the issue of first language and subsequent bi- and multilingual learning. Mr. Chairman, the interconnectedness between the concepts of development and education are inescapable. The Interagency Support Group's reflection paper on the special theme, Development with Culture and Identity, demonstrates that. In this context, the use of particular language as the language of instruction in a classroom conveys to the learner both a practical and symbolic sense of supremacy. It suggests that language of instruction is the language of status and the vernacular, or the language of transaction, is inferior. Of particular concern here, Mr. Chairman, are the recent changes in bilingual education in the Northern Territory of Australia. Dominant development paradigms in the context of education mean that education is increasingly seen through an economic lens. Human capital theory, which correlates investments in education with economic growth, is posited as an appropriate basis for analysis of education policy. Within the human capital theory model, there are two views. The narrow view, where the acquisition of knowledge and skills can be measured against higher earnings, and the broad view, where learning is a valuable process in itself, even if it doesn't contribute to higher earnings. This paradigm, applied to the model at the micro level, where education is seen in terms of individual economic productivity, leads to the prevailing policy response on a focus on what can be measured, privileging the narrow view over the broad view. At the macro level, the application of human capital theory model leads to a focus on the measurement of social and private rates of return on education. Examples of social returns in the macro application of the model include health and well-being outcomes and the development of greater social capital. However, as these rates of return are difficult to measure, governments often default to the micro-level measurements, the private rates of return vis-à-vis educational attainment and earnings. The application of this theory to education, to the education sphere, Mr. Chairman, has typically seen measurements constructed in the form of standardised tests delivered in the language of instruction, and in my country this means that Aboriginal children, many of whom don't speak standard Australian English, are being tested in languages they simply do not understand. This results in lower average standardised test scores for Aboriginal children across Australia. And as in other parts of the world, there is a direct correlation between remoteness and lesser results, with those living in the remotest part of the country in achieving the lowest results of all. As mentioned, Mr. Chairman, the focus of the debate on bilingual learning in our country has become political rather than pedagogical, with the political imperative now being to improve the results of Aboriginal children in standardised tests delivered in English. There is no doubt or argument against the fact that Aboriginal students in Australia should become proficient in English as the language of transaction. That's the reality. However, recent policy developments are based on political imperatives driven by the short-term need to improve standardised test scores, regardless of the preponderance of evidence that well-resourced bilingual and multilingual education programs improve education outcomes overall. Furthermore, the evidence shows that having the official language of instruction as a home language significantly lowers the risk of having fewer than 4 years in education at age 7 to 22, which sadly, Mr. Chairman, is the fate of too many of Indigenous Australians. Another concerning consequence is the impact that these decisions will have on the extinguishment of Aboriginal languages in Australia. The 2009 UNESCO Atlas of World Languages in Danger of Disappearing states that Australia has 108 languages that are in various dangers, various degrees of danger. Numerous academics have commented on the naivety and unintelligence of developing a state or national literacy policy on the basis of a debate of test scores and methods without an understanding of the changing places and contexts where people are using literacy for them and their communities, own cultural interests and capital gains. Finally, Mr. Chairman, the Interagency Support Group report on this forum challenges all mechanisms of the UN and all states to develop and implement, with appropriate resources, effective measures for doing so. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some recommendations. I'll take them up with our esteemed rapporteur. Thank you.
Muchas gracias, señor Dodson. Lo que usted acaba de señalarlos es justamente lo que perjudica al crecimiento de nuestros pueblos indígenas, porque somos educados en las lenguas de colonización y se nos exige que podamos rendir como si fueran nuestras lenguas maternas y los métodos de medición, pues, en ese caso son totalmente injustos y ahí tenemos problemas con nuestro crecimiento, pero también respecto a lo que se ha estado señalando acá repetidamente, a la restauración de nuestras culturas y nuestros paradigmas de vida. Vamos a dar la palabra a la señora Janet Kuji, que es de la Coordinadora de Organizaciones Indígenas de la Cuenca Amazónica. La señora Kuji tiene la palabra. Por favor, puede hacer uso de la palabra la señora Kuji. Está en la sala, levante la mano si... Entonces vamos a pasar a... Por favor, tiene la palabra. Tiene la palabra.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente. Distinguished members of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, distinguished representatives of member states, UN agencies, indigenous leaders, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the International Indigenous Women Forum, an international network of national and regional organizations from the Americas, Asia, and Africa, I would like to congratulate our brother, Carlos Mamani, for his elections as a chairperson of the Permanent Forum. I would also like to express our warm gratitude to our sister, Victoria Tauli Kurpos, for all her years of leadership in such a role. The International Indigenous Women Forum is especially concerned about the situation Indigenous women are facing in regard to development policies that are being carried out at this moment. We understand that the current globalization and development processes are negative and have negative consequences for Indigenous peoples, with particular and serious impact on Indigenous women. Considering the central role of Indigenous women in their own people's development process, and the fact that they are vital for the transmission of cultural practices and essential to the maintaining of Indigenous identity, such as language and ancestral history, medicine knowledge, socialization patterns, among other, and considering also that Indigenous women are key actors for change processes of their own cultures, we recommend member states, UN agencies, and relevant entities first to establish culturally appropriate mechanisms respectful of the principle of free, prior, and informed consent to ensure full participation of Indigenous women in decision-making levels, particularly those concerning development processes that directly or indirectly affect Indigenous people's life. We also recommend to promote and support development processes led and carried out by Indigenous women's organizations in accordance with Article 3 and 32 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. For instance, leadership and capacity building schools and the creation of funds managed by Indigenous women themselves. In conclusion, we highlight the commitment of the International Indigenous Women Forum in implementing the recommendations adopted by the Permanent Forum, the Program of Action of the Second Decade, and the Articles of the UN Declarations on the Rights of Indigenous People. Thank you.
Gracias, señora Kuji. Tiene la palabra la señora Tia Oros Peters de la Seventh Generation Fund de América del Norte y Sudamérica. La señora Tia Oros, por favor, tiene la palabra.
And first, let me congratulate you on your election to this esteemed position. And thank also to our sister, Vicky Tauli Kurpos, for her 5 years of leadership. Honorable Chair, esteemed members of the Permanent Forum, brothers and sisters of the world, thank you for the opportunity of addressing the United Nations Permanent Forum. The Seventh Generation Fund for Indian Development submits this intervention with 16 co-signers. Our brother chair, we walk within the prayers of our ancestors, and we thank them for this pathway they have set before us. We know water is crucial for biocultural diversity and for sustaining all aspects of Indigenous people's survival and well-being, assuring our physical health, nurturing us spiritually, and central for the vitality of our cultures and traditional livelihoods. We recognize water is the most vulnerable element of all forms of life in light of climate change and its impacts, and coupled with encroachment of invasive development leading to terricide, ecocide, and aquacide. We must take action now, as some places are flooded and others are stricken with drought. We urgently reiterate the critical significance of protecting all water sources and Indigenous peoples' full and unencumbered access to clean water on our territories for our physical, our cultural, and our spiritual sustenance. And we advance these recommendations: that any initiatives related to water observe and fully recognize all articles of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, including treaty rights to water; that the Permanent Forum recommend to ECOSOC, in coordination with UNEP, a call for the coordination of a UN official experts meeting on water that will initiate a close review and assessment of water allocation, regulation, and access policies affecting the rights of Indigenous nations. This can explore and establish indicators of water well-being for Indigenous nations and the world community; that the Permanent Forum call for the mandate of the independent expert on human rights obligations related to access to safe drinking water and sanitation be extended beyond drinking water and sanitation issues alone, and to work with UNEP for an international study on water and advance the concerns in relation to the rights of Indigenous peoples to clean water for our spiritual sustenance and cultural livelihoods; that the Permanent Forum call for the immediate appointment of a special rapporteur for the protection of water and water catchment areas to gather testimony directly from Indigenous nations of the world targeted for and impacted by water issues on our lands and territories. The Permanent Forum carried forth this recommendation in 2005, and we urgently ask that this appeal is advanced once again this year; that the Permanent Forum advocate for the establishment of United Nations International Year for Water that conduct focused research, emphasize critical concerns of water access, potability, and the holistic integrity of all aspects of life, including our cultural and spiritual facets in relations to Indigenous peoples and our nations. We affirm President Evo Morales' call in 2008 for a UN Convention on Water, and further, that Indigenous peoples fully participate in the development of that convention. We ask the Permanent Forum to immediately take action this year to establish water as a theme for its 10th session in 2011. This is a cross-cutting theme across all six of the UN-mandated areas. Mr. Chair, we call it Kyawe Pa'amni Nipi, water, the life-giver. The significance of water is expressed in a rainbow of songs, stories, ceremonies, and holds a potent place in our cultures, linking us together in a continuous life-affirming cycle. Yet increasingly, our territories are either flooded or they're destroyed by the unquenchable greed of industrialization, a feature of this ongoing colonization. Soon, even our most lands will be barren. Soon, even our tears will dry up. Soon, we will only have blood in our eyes as the wars for oil transform into those world water wars that we fear, that will shroud the globe in a clash from which humanity cannot survive. Too many of us are dying of thirst. Our children, the generations to come, will inherit this, and it's for them that we call upon you, the Permanent Forum, our dear brothers and sisters of the world, and offer this intervention for water and for peace. Thank you.
Gracias, señora Oros. Ahora damos la palabra a la señora Mónica Alemán del Foro Indígena de Mujeres. Señora Mónica Alemán, ¿puede levantar la mano, Mónica Alemán? No, no. Entonces vamos a pasar a dar la palabra a la siguiente oradora, Eva Gamboa, del Enlace Continental de Mujeres Indígenas. Por favor, Eva, que si puede decir sí. Para nuestro registro su nombre y organización.
¿Qué dice? Sí. Distinguidos miembros del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas de las Naciones Unidas, distinguidos representantes de los Estados miembros, Agencia de las Naciones Unidas, líderes y lideresas indígenas, damas y caballeros, como Enlace Continental de Mujeres Indígenas, organización regional que articula organizaciones nacionales y locales de Sudamérica, quisiera extender mi saludo al hermano Carlos Mamani como nuevo presidente electo del Foro Permanente, sintiéndonos felices que luego de 9 años nuestra región latinoamericana de Latinoamérica esté representada en este puesto. También quisiéramos reconocer la excelente labor realizada por nuestra hermana y amiga Victoria Tauli Corpus en dicha función. Las mujeres indígenas nos encontramos especialmente preocupadas por la situación de las mujeres frente a los procesos de desarrollo y globalización impulsados en la actualidad. Entre las múltiples consecuencias negativas de estos procesos, quisiéramos hoy resaltar algunos aspectos que consideramos prioritarios y que se encuentran interconectados: el cambio climático, la pérdida del conocimiento tradicional y formas tradicionales de producción, y la pérdida de la soberanía alimentaria. Mujeres y niñas están siendo desproporcionadamente afectadas por las inestabilidades extremas del clima y los desastres naturales que son cada vez más frecuentes. El impacto del cambio climático y en particular el calentamiento global afectan de forma desigual los territorios indígenas, trastocando las formas de vida, la salud, la cultura, la economía, los recursos hídricos y naturales y la vida misma de los pueblos. Como consecuencia, se evidencian crisis de la seguridad alimentaria, enfermedades, pérdidas de los conocimientos y prácticas tradicionales, la debilitación de las propias estructuras de organización y gobierno, rompiéndose la relación del equilibrio ecológico, socioeconómico y espiritual. Considerando que las mujeres indígenas somos actoras centrales de los procesos de desarrollo de nuestros propios pueblos, como transmisoras de la cultura y la identidad, promotora de la preservación de pautas culturales e impulsora de cambios, recomendamos a los Estados miembros, Agencia de Naciones Unidas y otros organismos relevantes: 1. Establecer políticas nacionales específicas para las mujeres indígenas, diseñadas, implementadas, evaluadas y monitoreadas con la plena participación de las organizaciones de mujeres indígenas. 2. Impulsar medidas legislativas y de políticas como parte de los procesos de desarrollo para asegurar la seguridad alimentaria de las mujeres y pueblos indígenas, considerando la producción de alimentos culturalmente aceptados, el cultivo y procesamiento de plantas de uso medicinal, los medios tradicionales de producción y el desarrollo de las biohuertas. 3. Garantizar la participación plena y efectiva de los pueblos y mujeres indígenas en los mecanismos de reglamentación y operatividad frente al cambio climático y en las decisiones sobre medidas de adaptación y mitigación, respetando el principio de consentimiento previo, libre e informado. Para concluir, quisiéramos resaltar que para que las mujeres y niñas indígenas puedan ser parte del proceso de desarrollo con identidad, es necesario garantizar una vida en paz y equilibrio, sin discriminación, sin violencia, donde sus derechos colectivos e individuales sean respetados. Muchísimas gracias.
Gamboa. Proseguimos con la lista de oradores. Damos la palabra ahora al señor Ronald Yunguska Holway, del Sand Hill Band of Indians, que es de América del Norte. Señor Holway, tiene la palabra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the forum, as well as to the Tadadaho of the Haudenosaunee, in behalf of all the work that you've done for indigenous people, not only in the United States, but around the world. Over 60 years ago, the General Assembly adopted and proclaimed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It is for this very reason that I'm here before you today, the violation of basic human rights as set forth in this declaration. For thousands of years, my ancestors lived and thrived along the shores of what is now the eastern seaboard of the United States of America. The Sandhill Band of Indians are the direct lineal descendants of the original inhabitants of the land now known as the state of New Jersey. Human remains dating back almost 2,000 years have been uncovered in this area, and the DNA testing of these remains has linked them to my family and myself personally. We are a sovereign people, as were our ancestors at the time of the arrival of the first Europeans. This is testified to by the fact that the early Europeans entered into and signed treaties with us, sovereign to sovereign. These treaties kept certain rights unto ourselves, including land, water, hunting, fishing, and coastal areas. The United States of America, at the end of the Revolutionary War, as part of the agreements to end hostilities, agreed to honor and maintain these international treaties by accepting and agreeing to act as a trustee. However, by 1802, the newly formed state of New Jersey had completely disregarded these treaties and federal law, and most importantly, our basic human rights to even exist. Over the next few decades, in an unsolicited invasion, our ancestral lands were seized, our people were forcibly removed or slaughtered. Those that survived were forced into hiding. Not only were federal laws completely ignored by New Jersey, but they had no legal right to even act as a state, as the state's own constitution was not ratified until 1842. All the while, the United States federal government turned a blind eye towards us, refusing to exercise their trust relationship. The denial of our basic rights to hunt, fish, and utilize our own lands resulted in a near genocidal destruction of our people, our culture, and our way of life. Yet through all this adversity, our tribe have at no time abandoned their ancestral homelands, and we were able to keep our people together through a continuously working tribal government. We claim rights to the lands and vast natural resources along the entire coastline of New Jersey, inland to the Delaware River. Also of importance, especially to this body, is the fact that under these seized lands lies the largest, freshest aquifers along the northeastern seaboard of the United States. After years of failed attempts to reconcile with the state of New Jersey, we were forced to take the state to federal court to prove our claim. Unfortunately, because of the magnitude and implication of the case, it has been purposely stalled in an attempt to defraud us and dispense with our international treaty rights. We have even in the course of the case itself brought forth evidence that the state of New Jersey, in its own court, documents, legal opinions, and internal documents, admit that they have illegally seized our land. Various archaeologists, universities, historians, and other specialists are in agreement and support our claims. It is not our intention to interfere with the continuity of the United States or its national security. However, it is our intention to take every avenue available to us, up to and including international intervention, and the World Court if necessary. It is our very existence that is at stake, and we have no intentions of going quietly into the night. As I approach this body, I ask here for the international community for its support and assistance in whatever manner available in having our international rights respected and restored. And it is our hope and prayers that this astute body and the global community will hear our long-suppressed cry and come to our aid. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias a usted. La señora Mareva Martínez de la Asociación Rotu No Anu de Tahití Pacífico. La señora Martínez.
Oui.
Levante la mano. Por favor, tiene la palabra.
Oveitawa, qui sommes-nous? Dans notre vision du monde autochtone, plutôt que « qui sommes-nous », nous disons « quelle source d'eau sommes-nous ». Nos philosophies de vie enseignent que nos sources sont océans, eaux amniotiques du ventre-mer ou de planètes bleues, où liens généalogiques unissent en un tout toutes les composantes de la nature. Parmi lesquels Ta'ata, Tangata, Kanaka et Nana, termes génériques de l'homme souche. de la souche est issue Ta'atatumu, en Meutron. L'autochtone de Polynésie française se définit comme Ta'atatumu, en Meutron. Tumu se disant d'une plante qui a un tronc, donc d'une plante en pleine force, car bien enracinée. Cette plante est issue de son lien intrinsèque à la terre, notion indissociablement de lui-même. Il n'a pas de tronc sans terre nourricière. De même, il n'y a pas de Ta'atatumu sans terre. Cette même terre de laquelle il naît lui servira de dernier refuge, car c'est le même terme, tanu, planté, qui est utilisé pour désigner l'action de planter un arbre et l'inhumation, l'enterrement d'un être humain. Les hommes plantent les autres hommes dans la terre comme ils plantent des arbres. Tumu signifie aussi la source, le noyau, la fondation. Ainsi, Ta'atatumu est aussi celui qui a connaissance de son noyau, ou plutôt de ses myriades de noyaux qui le relient au grand tout. C'est pourquoi Ta'atatumu appelle la terre Pumetua, noyau mère. Le lien qu'il attache à sa terre de naissance est aussi vital que l'attachement à sa famille et à ses ancêtres dont les racines généalogiques descendent au plus profond de la terre jusqu'au premier ancêtre devenu animal protecteur, car il est ancêtre de terre, mer, animal, pierre, cap, montagne, relié par autant de fils de lumière qu'il a développé avec son tumu. Il affirme son identité en déclinant les noms de lieux de son espace communautaire. Il se définit alors comme homme territoire. Il n'est pas tahitien, mais ta'ata tahiti, homme tahiti. Il n'habite pas tahiti, il est tahiti. Il n'est pas marquisien, mais enana, homme, équivalent du terme tahitien ta'ata, qui désigne de façon générique le genre humain. Sa terre est fenois enana, terre de l'homme. Il n'habite pas les marquises. Les marquises le font homme. Ta'ata aya, homme pays. Issu des sillages d'étoiles et d'océans, notre vision de monde multidimensionnel a transposé à terre V'amat'ena, pirogue originale, l'organisation sociale à l'image de la pirogue double, dotée avec équilibre d'une coque femelle et d'une coque mâle, reliée par une plateforme communautaire où chaque membrure est importante, nul ne détenant la pirogue dans sa totalité. L'autochtone de Polynésie française se confond avec un groupe dans un groupe d'îles formant une entité territoriale homogène, nommée par la puissance coloniale archipel. Il n'est pas différent de sa terre, de son île, de son archipel. Il est chacun de ses territoires, et chacun de ses territoires est lui. Le territoire le produit et il est produit par le territoire. Rien ne vient les séparer. Après les guerres d'annexion du XVIIIe et XIXe siècle, l'État colonisateur rassemble 5 archipels, autrefois indépendants les uns des autres, en une colonie actuellement Polynésie française. Depuis le statut d'autonomie interne qui transforme la Polynésie française en pays d'outre-mer, doté de signes distinctifs, l'autochtone de Polynésie française continue de se déterminer de la même façon. Il se fond désormais avec son territoire national. Il est Ta'ata Aya, homme pays. Le peuple de Polynésie française se reconnaît entièrement du peuple de l'Océanie, constitué par vagues de peuplement, dont la première remonte à moins 1060 ans du littoral de la Chine, pour arriver ensuite vers l'Indonésie, la Mélanésie, les rives de la Nouvelle-Guinée et les îles du Pacifique. Les langues austronésiennes telles qu'elles sont actuellement classifiées par les linguistes donnent une image des routes des peuplements suivies. Les langues parlées en Polynésie française sont plupart des langues océaniennes répandues en Mélanésie, Micronésie et Polynésie. Nos souches sont l'océan et tout ce qu'il comporte, depuis les étoiles du ciel qui sont les piliers de la maison pacifique, où toutes les familles des souches de Atatumu, Tata'ai'a, sont unies par Taumatafef Atupuhau, dont les tentacules se déploient dans les 8 directions et nous rattachent les uns aux autres des Samoa aux abords des Amériques. Le peuple autochtone de Polynésie française, depuis le XXe siècle, et plus particulièrement depuis son statut d'outre-mer, est porté par un vouloir vivre collectif qui le fonde en nation. Cette notion de nation s'établit sur un passé commun de voyages transocéaniques, de langues et cultures partagées, d'annexions imposées, mais aussi sur une histoire contemporaine de christianisation et de colonisation, sur une communauté d'intérêt économique née de la participation de tous les archipels au développement économique du pays, et surtout un vouloir vivre ensemble qui inclut les communautés chinoises et françaises qui constituent avec le peuple autochtone la société contemporaine polychrome de Polynésie française. Les discriminations dont se sont victimes une large part du peuple autochtone de Polynésie française, notamment en termes de dépossession foncière et territoriale, d'échecs scolaires et sociaux, posent depuis 1946 avec la transformation des établissements français de l'Océanie en territoire de Polynésie française et l'extension aux autochtones de la citoyenneté française, la question des droits collectifs et du droit à disposer d'eux-mêmes. Les autochtones de Polynésie française gardent un fort attachement à leur identité d'hommes du Pacifique, dans une nation et sur un territoire national. Recommandation. Déclarant que les peuples autochtones du monde ont le droit de décider de disposer d'eux-mêmes et dans l'exercice de ce droit, demandant que soit reconnue et respectée la vision autochtone, holistique du monde et la relation filiale à toute manifestation de la nature, et que toutes les décisions de développement économique et négociations y afférents soient guidées par cette philosophie de vie. Demandant que les peuples autochtones soient reconnus en tant que dépositaires et gardiens exclusifs de toutes les ressources naturelles connues ou à découvrir existant sur le territoire et de leurs biens culturels et intellectuels, et en tant que premiers bénéficiaires de ces ressources naturelles et de ses droits de propriété intellectuelle et culturelle. Demandant que la communauté internationale renforce les mécanismes de protection en vigueur et rende effective leur mise en application dès à présent. En conséquence, demandant la reconnaissance et l'application immédiate des droits collectifs à tous les peuples autochtones. Merci.
Muchas gracias. Recuerdo nuevamente a nuestros distinguidos participantes que hagamos el uso debido del tiempo que tenemos, que son 3 minutos. Y por favor, ahora damos la palabra al señor Armand Mackenzie, de la Nación Inuit del Canadá. Tiene la palabra el señor Mackenzie. Por favor, y repita su nombre, necesitamos para nuestro récord.
Actually, Mr. Chairperson, my sister here, Vicky Leliev, will read our statement, and we have something for you as a chairperson of this forum and to the expert members of the permanent forum after her statement.
Bonjour, Monsieur le Président, chers représentants et participants de cette présente instance. En introduction à notre présentation, nous évoquons le contenu de l'article 14 de la Déclaration qui proclame que les peuples autochtones ont le droit d'établir et de contrôler leur propre système et établissement scolaire où l'enseignement est disposé dans leur propre langue d'une manière adaptée à leur méthode culturelle d'enseignement et d'apprentissage. Les Autochtones, en particulier les enfants, ont le droit d'accéder à tous les niveaux et à toutes les formes d'enseignement public sans discrimination aucune. Même au Canada, nous sommes tellement loin de cette réalité. Permettez-moi, Monsieur le Président, d'expliquer brièvement cette situation. Tout d'abord, le droit à l'éducation est proclamé dans toutes les plus importantes conventions et déclarations des Nations unies. La Déclaration universelle des droits de l'homme, le Pacte international relatif aux droits économiques, sociaux et culturels, la Convention relative aux droits économiques, sociaux et culturels, et la Convention relative aux droits de l'enfant. Au Canada, chez la Première Nation Innu, la majorité des étudiants n'arrivent pas à terminer leurs études secondaires qui leur permettraient d'accéder à des études supérieures et professionnelles. Un grand nombre d'élèves développent d'importants retards pédagogiques déjà à partir des premières années scolaires. Cette situation réclame une réorganisation des services soutenus par un financement approprié et continu. Ceux qui ne réussissent pas à performer dans le modèle éducatif québécois se croient entièrement responsables de leur échec et perdent confiance dans leurs capacités. Ainsi, au lieu de favoriser l'épanouissement des individus, l'école a plutôt tendance à saper leur identité et leur estime de soi. La situation présente s'explique par un ensemble complexe de facteurs, entre autres des programmes scolaires non adaptés, le sous-financement des écoles autochtones, la nécessité de sanctionner les études dans une langue qui n'est pas la nôtre, les problèmes socio-économiques engendrés par la colonisation, la très grande dispersion et l'isolement de nos communautés. La situation dans laquelle on se trouve est paradoxale. Le gouvernement du Canada finance les écoles Innu, mais ne sanctionne pas les études et ne prévoit aucun budget qui pourrait permettre aux Premières Nations de développer des programmes d'études et du matériel pédagogique adapté aux besoins de nos élèves. Dépendant du ministère de l'Éducation du Québec pour la sanction des études, nos écoles se voient obligées de se conformer au curriculum scolaire québécois, malgré qu'elles demeurent sous-financées par rapport aux écoles québécoises. Conformément aux traditions autochtones, l'éducation doit viser le développement intégral de l'enfant, intellectuel, spirituel, socio-affectif et physique. Trop souvent, la réussite éducative est identifiée à la seule obtention d'un diplôme et pourtant, elle devrait être plus englobante. À l'heure actuelle, les cours de langue et de culture Innu ne sont que des ajouts accessoires dans nos écoles. Le financement est inexistant pour développer des programmes éducatifs ou des activités en ces matières. L'éducation est la clé de l'avenir. Elle doit assurer l'insertion de nos jeunes dans la société contemporaine et les préparer à assumer les responsabilités de leur nation. Et enfin, à défaut de reconnaître un ministère de l'Éducation Innu pour sanctionner nos programmes, le gouvernement du Québec doit permettre aux jeunes Innu le droit d'être sanctionnés en français langue seconde. Nous croyons que leurs chances d'obtention d'un diplôme en seront grandement améliorées. Pour les Innu, cela signifierait aussi obtenir une première reconnaissance en tant que peuple distinct, doté d'une langue et d'une culture propre. Si vous le permettez, Monsieur le Président, nous voulons vous déposer officiellement aujourd'hui la Déclaration des Nations unies sur les droits des peuples autochtones, traduite en langue Innu, langue autochtone de la nation Innu, à titre de mesure de mise en œuvre immédiate de cette Charte des droits et libertés auprès de notre peuple. Merci pour votre attention. Yamé.
Muchas gracias a los hermanos de la Nación Inuit. Proseguimos con la lista de oradores, siempre recordándoles que tenemos solamente 3 minutos para cada uno de los oradores. Y además que cuando se les dé la palabra, digan el nombre de su organización y el suyo propio. Entonces ahora tenemos la participación del señor Bolívar López Cansuet, que representa a varias organizaciones. Señor Bolívar, tiene la palabra.
Al Congreso General CUNA de Panamá y al Consejo Internacional de Tratados Indios. Los pueblos indígenas del Suramérica, Centroamérica y del Caribe, Norteamérica, el Pacífico, Asia y Europa Oriental, participantes de la capacitación en el proyecto Acceso Global para los Pueblos Indígenas 2010, reunidos en Nueva York del 14 al 16 de abril del año en curso, como pueblos con distintas identidades y culturas, para compartir nuestra cosmovisión sobre nuestras inquietudes y problemas relacionados con el desarrollo de nuestra identidad y cultura, conforme al artículo 3 y 32 de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Hemos aprendido e intercambiado experiencias sobre nuestras luchas comunes en contra del desarrollo impuesto, insustentable, de intereses ajenos a nuestras comunidades. Esto incluye la deforestación, la minería, las represas, la interconexión eléctrica, la agricultura tóxica, industrializada y transgénica, la destrucción de diversidad biológica, extracción petrolera y arenas alquitranosas, la contaminación de las aguas y del aire que afecta nuestra supervivencia y modo de vida como pueblos indígenas. Nosotros, como pueblos indígenas originarios de estas regiones, seguiremos existiendo como pueblos con identidades y culturas diversas, a través del desarrollo económico, social, político y cultural que esté fundamentado en nuestras prácticas ancestrales de sustentabilidad. Por lo tanto, señor presidente, recomendamos a la novena sesión del Foro Permanente lo siguiente. En aplicación del artículo 42 de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, que hagan un llamado a los gobiernos y a los organismos de las Naciones Unidas y a las agencias e instituciones internacionales para implementar los artículos 3 y 32 en todo el desarrollo económico, político, social y cultural relacionado con nuestros pueblos, tierras y territorios, con plena y efectiva participación de los pueblos indígenas. En cumplimiento del convenio 169 de la OIT y la mencionada Declaración de las Naciones Unidas, tipificada en el artículo 17.3, hacer un llamado a los gobiernos, a las Naciones Unidas y los organismos internacionales a erradicar todas las formas de servidumbre y trabajo forzoso de los pueblos indígenas. Y para terminar, señor presidente, tercera recomendación es con respecto a la implementación de la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas y nuestros derechos intrínsecos, la de los pueblos indígenas o de los pueblos originarios, hacer un llamado a los gobiernos y a los organismos de las Naciones Unidas y a las agencias e instituciones internacionales para la aplicación e implementación del consentimiento libre, previo e informado de los pueblos indígenas antes de aprobar cualquier desarrollo que podría afectar nuestras identidades, culturas, tierras y territorios. Nuetkine, presidente Beana Benito Skua. Muchísimas gracias por su atención, señor presidente.
Gracias a usted, hermano. Ahora damos paso a la intervención del señor Les Malesé. ¿Está señor Malesé? Por favor, levante la mano, señor Malesé. ¿No está? ¿Tú lo conoces? ¿Está?
ask him to raise the hand.
Okay, señor Maleset, por favor. Yeah. Hey. Por favor, señor Malese, diga su nombre y el de su organización. Necesitamos para el registro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Mr. Chairperson, my name is Les Malese. I'm speaking on behalf of the Indigenous Peoples Organisations of Australia, which is a number of delegations represented here at the Permanent Forum. Mr. Chairperson, this is the first intervention on behalf of the Aboriginal Peoples and Torres Strait Islander Peoples delegations from Australia. We take the opportunity to pay our respects to the Indigenous peoples in whose territories we now meet and to bring greetings from our peoples to the other Indigenous peoples of the world, to the UN organisations and officials and to the state members of the United Nations. We also take the opportunity to congratulate you, Mr. Chairperson, on your election to preside over this session and express our gratitude to Ms. Victoria Taulikorpis for her many, many years of leadership for this important organisation, and especially during the critical period of the conception of the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Mr. Chairperson, it is very disappointing that the 2010 UN report entitled The State of the World's Indigenous Peoples reveals not nearly enough is being done to support the development, that is, the economic, social, cultural and political development of Indigenous peoples. We are disappointed that states in particular are not responding adequately to Articles 38 and 39 of the Declaration to cooperate with Indigenous peoples, taking appropriate measures, including legislative measures, and by providing the financial and technical support to the Indigenous peoples, which is so necessary for the achievement of our rights under this Declaration. Mr. Chairperson, Victoria Taulikorpis has presented a paper, document CRP4 of this session, which suggests a more sustainable world can be achieved by ensuring cultural identity and environmental sustainability is given equal attention as economic development. And I quote, "I further argue that Indigenous peoples should be key players in bringing about a more sustainable world, as they are the ones who have proven that they can live within the limits set by the earth and thus they can lead by example. Many Indigenous people still continue to live by the wisdom and values passed on to them by their ancestors, and it is because of this that they still live in territories where the ecosystems are not totally damaged." End of quote. As has been witnessed over many centuries, Indigenous peoples have successfully managed our territories and cultures, and it is only in very recent times that the global community has come to appreciate the importance and sustainability of our civilizations, our laws and our practices. Unfortunately, in places such as Australia, not only is the state vigorously competing to emulate greed, it is attempting to force upon the Aboriginal peoples and Torres Strait Islander peoples the creed that economic gain is not only good and desirable, but also that is absolutely necessary for our development and well-being. The government is not guided by any notion of Indigenous well-being and certainly unable to grasp the significance of land, language, social connection and cultural practices to the Aboriginal peoples and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Economic development should not come at the expense of social and cultural rights and or development. Mr. Chairperson, we were most pleased the Australian Government announced its support for the Declaration in April of last year, but we are dissatisfied with the lack of engagement and progress since that time to ensure that our right to development within the structure of self-determination was realised. While preventing our collective interest to act as peoples, the government has overridden our right to development with two explicit official policy positions that have driven the government's agenda for the current administration. These policies are closing the gap and Northern Territory Emergency Response. The Northern Territory Emergency Response is a policy of intervention by government affecting lives of individual Aboriginal people that is only lawful in Australia because the national law preventing racial discrimination has been suspended. The Racial Discrimination Act of 1975 was shelved 4 years ago to legitimise Australian government plans to control the spending of individual Aboriginal families on welfare. As part of the intervention, the government has conveniently discounted community-controlled organisations, programs and decision-making, choosing instead to substitute the existing community services with more expensive, inefficient and wasteful government agencies. Our identity and capacity as peoples is completely crippled by this policy of government because the people concerned are unable to undertake decision-making as established in Articles 18 and 19 of the Declaration, are unable to act autonomously or under self-government as set out in Article 4 of the Declaration, and are unable to undertake development as provided in Articles 3 and 32 and also in Articles 5, 11, 12, 13, 20, 23, 25, 26, 29 and 31. The Closing the Gap policy is a targeted program to overcome a disadvantage faced by the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population in the areas of education, health, including life expectancy, and employment. This policy, which dominates the government agenda, gives no recognition to our identity as peoples and is devoid of any assistance, again as proposed in Articles 38 and 39, for technical or financial assistance to the Aboriginal peoples and Torres Strait Islander peoples. The Closing the Gap policy identifies economic development as a policy objective of the government, but in actuality, the policy is to halve the gap in unemployment rates between Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples by the year 2018. So the government does not have an economic development policy which relates to us as Aboriginal peoples and Torres Strait Islander peoples. In an official government report called Options for the Future of Indigenous Australia, the government gives an unequivocal message that development as Indigenous peoples is completely unsupported. This report was released in 2009, soon after the government issued a statement in support of the declaration. In response to the suggestion that the economic development target include a target relating to business ownership, the government's official response is included in that report under a section headed Ideas with no further action at that time. And to quote what's in that report, thank you, Mr. Chair, I'll conclude. In that report, it says, the Prime Minister will report to Parliament on the first working day of every year, and Indigenous employment is the best overall measure of Indigenous economic development. Mr. Chair, I'll hand in the complete paper, including recommendations which are supported from the documents provided by the Secretariat of the Permanent Forum. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Muchas gracias a usted, señor Malecé. Vamos a dar la palabra al señor Tomás Alarcón de CAPAG. Tiene la palabra.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente. En primer término, quería expresar un reconocimiento a todos aquellos mártires indígenas aymaras de los Andes que en esta sesión, en representación de su persona, han asumido la conducción del foro permanente en un hecho histórico y que, indudablemente, Túpac Katari, Túpac Amaru estarán contentos desde el más allá mirando esta contribución que hacemos los hombres andinos al proceso de derechos indígenas en la arena internacional. Somos la Comisión Jurídica para el Autodesarrollo de los Pueblos Originarios Andinos, CAPAG, con estatus consultivo desde el año 1999 en el ECOSOC. Señor Presidente, saludando su elección, permítame ilustrar con un caso real en los Andes de Sudamérica la necesidad urgente de implementar los artículos 3 y 32 de la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. El caso es la siembra del agua mediante las amunas y los bofedales. Es una forma indígena de reproducir el agua en los Andes. Se practica en la zona andina de Lima con el nombre de amunas y en la zona altoandina de Tacna, en la frontera Perú-Chile-Bolivia, donde se les conoce como bofedales. Las amunas es un ritual que se inicia con saludos, intercambios y abrazos para la faena de limpieza de las acequias amunadoras. Las fechas varían según el comportamiento de las lluvias. Participan las autoridades y comuneros de cada parcialidad, teniendo como invitados a las autoridades de la comunidad madre de San Andrés de Tupicocha. Se trata de una manifestación única de la cultura andina viva en Lima, que sigue perdurable debido a los exitosos resultados ecológicamente sostenibles que han tenido hasta nuestros días. El proceso ceremonial de las amunas surge con el ofrecimiento de las ofrendas a la Madre Tierra. Los oficiantes del ritual y el trabajo comunitario son los huares, quienes son y bajan siguiendo el curso de la sequía munadora, bajan con las hierbas de las alturas, el paño ceremonial y las calaveritas de los abuelos. Los bofedales, señor presidente, son espejos de agua que se forman en el altiplano a base del equilibrio ecológico que surge de los afloramientos naturales del agua subterránea hacia la superficie. Son mantenidos por el agua de los deshielos de los glaciares andinos y precipitaciones de agua. En los bofedales crecen hierbas variadas que se conservan en medio de los espejos de agua donde pastan vicuñas, llamos, alpacas, suris, pero que sobre todo sirven para mantener fresco el terreno y permite la evaporación del agua hacia las nubes para que vuelva a caer en forma de lluvia y así conservarse en permanente reproducción de las cepas del agua. De esta manera el agua vuelve al ucupacha o interior para volver a salir hacia la superficie o caipacha y luego elevarse a la evaporación al acapacha, lo que de arriba y donde vuelve a bajar en forma de lluvia, funciona el ciclo natural de reproducción del agua. Señor presidente, esta es una forma como en nuestro pueblo nosotros hacemos reproducir el agua, porque el agua tiene vida, es madre y es la base del desarrollo, es la base de nuestro autodesarrollo. Queremos proponer, señor presidente, para concluir, que los estados deben permitir que en sus territorios ancestrales sean los mismos pueblos indígenas los que definamos las prioridades en el aprovechamiento de los recursos naturales. Por tanto, pedimos que el Foro Permanente proponga al Consejo Económico y Social, ECOSOC, recomendar a los estados legislar los contenidos de los artículos 23 de la Declaración, el 3 y el 32 de la Declaración, con normas que oficialicen los medios del uso sabio del agua, de los recursos naturales, tierras y territorios en los pueblos indígenas, basados en su cosmovisión y que dieron resultados exitosos en su vida económica, social de los pueblos indígenas, a fin de no permitir tecnologías que degradan los recursos, tierras y aguas. Y finalmente, nos adherimos al pedido mayoritario que se está dando en esta sala de que se nombre un relator especial por el agua en los pueblos indígenas, no solo para revisar las flagrantes violaciones y degradación de nuestras aguas, sino también, sobre todo, analizar esas formas reproductivas y el manejo social que los pueblos indígenas le damos al agua en marco de nuestro autodesarrollo para nuestros pueblos. Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
Tomás, damos la palabra al señor Wilton Littlechild de la International Organization of Indigenous Resources Development. Señor Littlechild, tiene la palabra.
Hi, gah keoni gang tetam skad na. Your Excellencies, expert members, respected elders, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. Our delegation thanks and honors the Haudenosaunee, the traditional caretakers of these territories, and Todaho Sid Smith. We welcome the two reports presented on the special theme and focus on Articles 3 and 32 of the UN Declaration. Please allow us at the outset to also thank the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, the President of the General Assembly, and the Under Secretary for ECOSOC for opening this ninth session of the Permanent Forum. Congratulations on your elections as chairperson and colleague rapporteur. In pledging our ongoing support, we thank also Vicky Tauli Corpus and Mick Dodson for all their contributions. The Musquechese Cree of Treaty No. 6 have participated in the processes of the UN guided by our elders and as signatories to Treaty No. 6. Development with culture and identity is a fundamental pillar of our work in the international arena. Treaty No. 6 is a way of life for us, and it identifies who we are as the Cree Nation. It should be remembered that this sacred agreement was made with and through our cultural and spiritual ceremony, Kichi Oichigeona, and therefore underpins our perspective of development. We respectfully recommend to the UN Permanent Forum expert members through this ninth session to include treaties and treaty principles in the consideration of this very important special theme. Our respective delegations have repeatedly stated that indeed the UN Declaration is also a UN Declaration on the treaty rights of indigenous peoples. At a minimum, Articles 3 and 32 must be read together with Article 37 and the relevant preambular paragraphs on treaties, as well as the UN Declaration on the Right to Development. We take this opportunity to remind the Permanent Forum that with only 5 years left until the 2015 deadline to achieve the MDGs, urgent action is required to ensure Indigenous participation in decision-making processes. We also submit that Article 32 is an important clarification and expansion of subparagraph 2 of the Common Article 1 of both international covenants. Our forefathers, through oral testimony, viewed and understood development from a holistic perspective. The original spirit and intent of our treaty right to development was stated by our chiefs and headmen in 1876. Respected members, we would recall, pursuant to the Interagency Support Group report yesterday by UNESCO, that the Vienna Declaration and Program of Action also states, and I quote, "The World Conference on Human Rights reaffirms the right to development as established in the Declaration on the Right to Development as a universal and inalienable right and an integral part of the fundamental human rights. The Rio Declaration on Environment and Development recognizes the right to development as one of its 27 principles. Principle 3 of the Declaration states, and I quote, "The right to development must be fulfilled so as to equitably meet developmental and environmental needs of present and future generations," end quote. As such, we support the full and effective participation of Indigenous women in the development of culture and identity through implementation of treaty, the UN Declaration, and the related international instruments. After all, in some areas, they are the treaty keepers. Finally, while this is a particular perspective, it's a significant component for the successful implementation of the UN Declaration. We respectfully urge the ninth session of the Permanent Forum to include a friendly amendment to the report EC19-2010-14 and add treaties and treaty principles in consideration of this very important special theme. We have submitted our full written intervention, Mr. President, and we would recommend that Articles 3 and 32 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples must be read together with the preambular paragraphs 7, 8, 14, 15, Article 37, and the UN Declaration on the Right to Development to be inclusive of the treaty nations' holistic perspective on Indigenous peoples' development with culture and identity. Thank you. Nanaskama. Hi, hi.
Gracias, señor Littlechild. El próximo orador en nuestra lista es el señor Akaluk Laing del Inuit Circumpolar, del Consejo Inuit Circumpolar. Tiene la palabra. Tiene la palabra. Tiene la palabra.
It's the mic. Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Akaluk Linge. I'm representing Inuit Circumpolar Council. When you, Mr. Chair, and the other members of the Permanent Forum met in Bolivia a few months ago to plan this current session, you chose for us in the Arctic a very timely and important special theme. I thank you and I congratulate you. Inuit across the Arctic in each of the four countries in which we live are facing dramatic changes. From Greenland to Canada, to Alaska to Russia, Inuit have ships never seen before coming through our sea ice and past our coastal communities. We have mining companies seeing new opportunities as they open mines. We have oil exploration companies drilling offshore. We have hydroelectric dams being designed and large aluminum smelters being planned. And the scale and speed with which these projects are being conceived are things we need to consider carefully through appropriate impact assessment studies. As we, Indigenous peoples, exercise our right to self-determination, we must be vigilant that the new self-government arrangements that we are increasingly negotiating with our former colonizers also pay heed to our rights as set out in the Article 32 of the Declaration. Mr. Chair, last year Greenland celebrated an historic milestone and entered into a new era with the inauguration of self-government. With this new arrangement, Greenland has assumed full responsibility of our subsurface resources. Across the Arctic, there are many large projects in the planning stage. We must find ways in which our fragile Arctic environment is not hurt and our cultural values are carried out through hunting and fishing and other activities that depend on healthy environment and the well-being of our people. We must find ways, Mr. Chair, to slow down and do things wisely. As you can see, Mr. Chair, the challenge lies in making these decisions in a manner that is well-funded, inclusive, so that we don't lose important parts of our culture and identity, and not to dance to the schedules and wishes of the resource extraction companies, but to that which respects and preserves our own culture and identity. As Secretary General Ban Ki-moon expressed so clearly yesterday, we need to protect our values of solidarity and reciprocity as they are fundamental to harmonious development. In the light of intervention, Mr. Chair, I would like to recommend that the United Nations Permanent Forum recommends to the ECOSOC President to allocate funding for a global Indigenous summit on this very issue, a global summit on promoting Indigenous culture and identity through self-determination. I believe that through such a summit, we could all learn invaluable lessons from each other. I thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Gracias a usted. Seguidamente, el próximo orador es Jaime Corisepa Neri, del Comité Indígena que representa a Latinoamérica. Tiene la palabra. Tiene la palabra.
Gracias. Presidente, quiero agradecer esta oportunidad de escucharnos, porque todos estos pueblos, estos líderes que estamos acá, venimos desde muy lejos para que esta novena sesión del Foro Permanente escuche las recomendaciones de nuestros pueblos. El quien les habla, señor presidente, es coordinador de CIPIASI, que es el Comité Internacional para la Protección de los Pueblos en Aislamiento y Contacto Inicial de la Amazonía, el Gran Chaco y la Región Oriental de Paraguay, CIPIASI, integrado por 11 organizaciones indígenas de 6 países de América del Sur, creado con el objetivo principal, señor presidente, de promover la protección y el respeto de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas señalados y reconocidos en el informe de la sexta sesión del Foro Permanente sobre Cuestiones Indígenas en el año 2007, como interlocutor de las organizaciones indígenas ante los estados, la sociedad civil y los organismos internacionales de defensa de los derechos humanos para la defensa de los derechos de los pueblos en aislamiento y contacto inicial. Preocupados por la grave situación de esos pueblos, señor presidente, en particular de los Murunawa, Chitonawa, Isconawa, Catataibo, Mascopiro, Nanti, en Perú, Tagaeri, Taromenani, en Ecuador, Ayoreo, en Paraguay, Nucacmacú, en Colombia, Pacahuara, Mbiayuki, en Bolivia, Mayoruna, Corubo, Morubo, Matsés, en Brasil, entre otros, que ante la retirada violación de sus derechos fundamentales podrían encontrarse en riesgo de extinción sociocultural. Por tal forma, recomendamos al Foro Permanente 1. Implementar las recomendaciones adoptadas en sus informes del 5, 6, 7 y 9 sesiones respecto a la protección de los pueblos en aislamiento y contacto inicial, e incorporar en su agenda de trabajo la atención sistemática a la situación de esos pueblos. 2. Realizar una investigación exhaustiva, señor presidente, sobre la situación de estos pueblos y que tengan como principio el respeto de su derecho a la autodeterminación, no forzar al contacto, respetar el aislamiento como su forma de vida y la participación de las organizaciones indígenas representativas que han asumido acciones de protección de estos pueblos. 3. Solicitar a los gobiernos de Perú, Ecuador, Colombia, Paraguay, Brasil, Bolivia y Venezuela, señor presidente, la cancelación de proyectos, megaproyectos u otras acciones que signifiquen presencia de actores externos y afectación del bosque en sus territorios habitados por estos pueblos mencionados, por representar una amenaza para sus vidas y su continuidad sociocultural, señor presidente. 4. Demandar a los gobiernos involucrados el reconocimiento oficial y protección efectiva a sus territorios de estos pueblos mencionados, al ser estos condición de vida, bienestar y continuidad sociocultural para ellos. 5. Posicionar en el ámbito de la ONU el respeto de los derechos fundamentales. Repito, señor presidente, el respeto de los derechos fundamentales y el derecho a la autodeterminación de pueblos indígenas en aislamiento y contacto inicial, fomentando así el respeto a sus formas de vida, cultura, identidad y su derecho a decidir libre y voluntariamente el grado de interrelación que desean tener con la sociedad envolvente, señor presidente. 6. Respaldar el proceso de elaboración de las directrices gubernamentales para la protección de los pueblos en aislamiento y contacto inicial, llevado a cabo por el Alto Comisionado de la ONU para Cuestiones Indígenas, y velar por la aplicación del proceso de mecanismo transparente de información, consulta y participación de las organizaciones indígenas involucradas, entre ellas CIPIASI. 7. Solicitar al relator especial para los derechos humanos y libertades fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas y al relator especial sobre el crimen de genocidio la atención urgente con incidencia directa en los gobiernos frente a los casos de violación de los derechos fundamentales de estos pueblos, los cuales se vienen produciendo con toda impunidad, promovidos principalmente por agentes extractivas, formales e informales que actúan respaldados por los gobiernos. 8. Finalmente, señor presidente, en virtud del reconocimiento conferido en el Foro Permanente de la ONU para Cuestiones Indígenas, CIPIASI, como interlocutor que ante los gobiernos, sociedad civil y organizaciones internacionales de defensa de los derechos humanos para la protección de los pueblos mencionados, solicitamos, señor presidente, el establecimiento de un nexo de comunicación permanente y formal que conlleve la implementación coordinada de las recomendaciones adoptadas por el Foro Permanente para Cuestiones Indígenas, Políticas y Acciones de Protección. Firmamos ONIC, CONAIE, NAHUE, FENAMAT, AIDESET, SIDOC, COYAP, UNAC, CAPI, OPIT, ASIDI. Señor presidente, muchas gracias por escuchar. Muchas gracias. Y que vivan los pueblos indígenas.
El próximo orador de nuestra lista es Delaria Festus, de Sudáfrica. Está el señor Festus, hola. Tiene la palabra. Y otra vez 3 minutos porque tenemos una lista larga de oradores.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. My name is Delaria Festus, and I will represent. I'm from the community, the Kwatusen Culture and Education Center. Since the beginning of human memory, small bands of my people, the San, have populated coastal, mountainous, and semi-arid places in southern Africa. It was our tradition to use the land in a sustainable manner. We express our identity in oral tradition and cultural practices. However, our identity and culture have been enormously eroded by historical events and contemporary circumstances. Over time, we have been driven from the land on which we lived on by Bantu-speaking livestock herders, colonialists, farmers, and governments, which established nature reserves on our ancestral lands. For decades, we did not have a place which we could call our own. When the Southern Africa region became more democratic and the apartheid era ended, we organized ourselves and established several representatives organizations, attempting to speak with one voice through our organizations. This enabled us to make our grievances heard, and the new democratic governments granted us some land, assisted us in developing educational mother tongue material, and in some cases, recognized our leadership. In South Africa, the Komani San community successfully reclaimed 35,000 hectares of their ancestral land in the Andriesvale-Askam area and 25,000 hectares within the now Kalahari Transfrontier Park in 1999. The Restitution of Land Rights Act of 1994 provided the basis for our claim. The South African Land Reform Program made it possible that the Kung and the Kwe communities, who had for more than 10 years lived in a tented camp at Smitsdrift near Kimberley, also received 13,000 hectares of land from the Mandela government. In Namibia, 2 San communities, namely the Tukwansi and the Kung, were awarded conservancies in 1998 and 2003, respectively. Conservancies provided their members the right to manage communal land and derive income from tourism, handicrafts, and safari hunting. In Botswana, the longest and most expensive court case in Botswana's history came to a surprising end on 13 December 2006, when 198 San won the right to return to their ancestral land in the Central Kalahari Game Reserve. This landmark case was another success for the San in reassessing land and natural resources in the region. The democratization of the Southern Africa region created an opportunity for the diverse ethnic groups to redefine their origins and identities. Unfortunately, the Khoi and the San are often still grouped together as Khoi San, mainly by academics who reason that both share a common language structure. The Khoi are traditionally herders with a hierarchical society, and the San are traditionally hunter-gatherers who had an egalitarian social order. Self-determination is largely accepted by both the Khoi and the San, and both groups prefer to be recognized as either San or Khoi. The San, with our rather flat egalitarian leadership structure, have been vulnerable to imposed leadership of more hierarchical organized groups, such as the different Bantu-speaking groups, but also the Khoi. In order to regain our cultural identity, we appeal to the governments and the academic world to honor our wish to be called San and not Khoi San, which was expressed in the Penduka Declaration of 2001. The San used to enjoy an eco-friendly and sustainable lifestyle that was attuned with nature. We are still well known for our healing dance, our music, and our knowledge about edible and medicinal plants. Often, other people are amazed about our accurate knowledge in understanding the complexity of nature and our fine-tuned observational skills. If they could, many of my people would like to live close to nature and at the same time enjoy the advantages of the information age. Some of the young people are currently relearning traditional skills, and a number of San communities strive to keep or revive our cultures and identities in balance with the convenience of modern life. I thank you for your attention.
Gracias a usted. Daremos paso a la intervención del señor Jorge Morales Toj, de Convergencia Nacional Maya Huaquepkej. ¿Estará el señor Jorge Morales? Por favor, tiene la palabra.
Gracias, señor presidente. Reciba saludos del Movimiento Maya de Guatemala. Soy Jorge Morales, acompañado de José Mario Tuy y Juana Bastival, delegados de la Convergencia Nacional Maya Huaquepkej. A este honorable foro demandamos y sugerimos que establezcan mecanismos, que se sugiera a los estados establecer mecanismos nacionales para generar un diálogo abierto con los pueblos indígenas, para definir el concepto de desarrollo, para que posteriormente se establezcan políticas que estén acordes a la visión e intereses de los pueblos indígenas, sobre la base de la libre determinación de nuestros pueblos. Asimismo, que se recomiende a los estados desarrollar mecanismos de consulta de buena fe con los pueblos indígenas, tomando en cuenta nuestras propias instituciones representativas como pueblos, para determinar estrategias y prioridades para el desarrollo de nuestras comunidades. Asimismo, que el honorable miembro del foro permanente busque mecanismos de seguimiento y monitoreo a las distintas recomendaciones y resoluciones emanadas de los distintos órganos de las Naciones Unidas vinculadas a los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Asimismo, en el marco del mandato del foro permanente, que se establezca un mecanismo de estudio y evaluación de los impactos culturales, sociales, ambientales y económicos que están generando hasta el día de hoy las empresas nacionales y transnacionales ubicadas sin nuestro consentimiento en nuestros territorios. Asimismo, se recomiende al Estado de Guatemala que declare lesivas las licencias otorgadas a las empresas mineras e hidroeléctricas, porque atentan contra la vida de la madre tierra y de los pueblos indígenas. Asimismo, que se recomiende al Estado de Guatemala no suscribir la prórroga del contrato 285, contrato petrolero, con la empresa francesa Perenco, ubicada en uno de los humedales más importantes de Mesoamérica, denominada Laguna del Tigre, porque destruirá una de las pocas reservas selváticas de Mesoamérica. Asimismo, que se exhorte a los miembros de las Naciones Unidas, a los Estados miembros y especialmente al gobierno de Guatemala a que cumpla en términos prácticos la declaración de los pueblos indígenas y que se respete la libre determinación. Estas recomendaciones, señor presidente, se fundamentan en que Guatemala, desde la instauración del Estado, ha habido una política de exclusión y racismo hacia los pueblos indígenas, que se evidencia con las políticas de desarrollo etnocéntricas excluyentes, las cuales han generado la destrucción de nuestros territorios. Asimismo, el modelo de desarrollo neoliberal que el Estado de Guatemala ha implementado en el territorio nacional ha favorecido históricamente a las clases económicas dominantes y racistas del país, lo cual ha profundizado la pobreza en los pueblos indígenas. Y una muestra de ello es que el 50% de la población vive debajo del umbral de la pobreza y el 15% en la extrema pobreza, lo cual afecta especialmente a nuestros pueblos. Asimismo, el nivel de desnutrición crónica que afecta a nivel nacional, el 43% corresponde a niños, especialmente de pueblos indígenas. Nuestra cosmovisión como pueblos indígenas se basa en la relación armónica y holística con nuestros elementos, como son nuestra madre tierra, en la cual el ser humano pertenece, pero no la domina, ni es dueño de ella. El racismo ambiental y estructural perpetuado por el Estado de Guatemala contra los pueblos indígenas está destruyendo la vida y la existencia misma de los pueblos a través del otorgamiento de concesiones de exploración y explotación mineras. Y como ejemplo de ello es que en la actualidad existen 459 concesiones mineras a empresas nacionales y transnacionales, todas ellas ubicadas en nuestros territorios, y estos megaproyectos están generando la destrucción de nuestra cultura, de nuestro ambiente y de nuestras tierras. Un claro ejemplo de la destrucción de nuestra madre tierra lo constituye la instalación de una fábrica de cementos Progreso y Mincesa S.A. en territorio maya cachiquel, en el municipio de San Juan Zacatepeques. Estas empresas mineras se han instalado sin el consentimiento libre, previo e informado de nuestras comunidades afectadas. Bajo el concepto de desarrollo, estas empresas han destruido 15 caballerías de territorio de los pueblos indígenas, están poniendo en riesgo el agua y están destruyendo más de 84 hectáreas de árboles, los cuales están dejando sin agua a 74 mil habitantes indígenas del área de San Juan Zacatepeques. Denunciamos que los líderes y dirigentes indígenas, hombres y mujeres, estamos siendo perseguidos y amenazados de muerte, y se ha criminalizado nuestra lucha por el territorio y la defensa de nuestros recursos naturales. Sin embargo, el compromiso de nuestro pueblo por la defensa de la madre tierra se ha profundizado y seguiremos luchando, aún a costa de nuestras propias vidas. Finalmente, alentamos a los pueblos indígenas del mundo a seguir la defensa de nuestra madre tierra, a profundizar la hermandad de nuestros pueblos y a seguir la lucha por la refundación de los estados neocoloniales, para asegurar nuestro derecho a definir nuestro propio desarrollo en base a nuestras cosmovisiones y nuestro ejercicio a la libre determinación. ¡Hayaya Vyayala! ¡Que vivan los pueblos indígenas del mundo!
Gracias, señor Morales. El próximo orador de nuestra lista es Nawang Sonam Sherpa de Nepal. El señor Sherpa, por favor. Señor Sherpa, no está, entonces damos paso a... Señor Sherpa, entonces tiene la palabra y les ruego ser breve, por favor. Diga su nombre y lo de su organización.
Mr. Chair, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to share this floor on behalf of Nepal Indigenous Nationalities Preservation Association and Nepal Sherpa Association. Nepal is a multicultural, multireligious, and multilinguistic country. The national data listed 59 ethnic groups spread across entire Nepal in 2000. Short distance create wide variation within social situation in country so diverse in its geography as Nepal, so that some areas may have homogeneous population belonging to one or another ethnic group, making them a national minority but local majority. In other areas, the population may be totally heterogeneous, although Nepal espouses value of multiculturalism. The indigenous people in Nepal who have their own unique cultural, social, and linguistic identities, which remains vastly distinct from mainstream or dominant culture shaped by one or two groups belonging to so-called high caste. Their economic, social, educational, and political achievements remains negligible. Many of their languages and culture in a decade or two to will become extinct. This is a bitter reality. The indigenous group linguistic, cultural, social, educational, and political status therefore needs urgent attention. The indigenous people were only finally considered in the 9th five-year national plan between 97 and 2002 in Nepal. They were marginalized or almost invisible in the previous 8 5-year national plan, leading to the sad and worrisome underdeveloped socioeconomic state of the many indigenous groups today. The 9th plan is the first plan that has a specific section on indigenous people under social security sector. The social framework bring in Nepal for the last decade, which includes indigenous people issues and concerns, is the direct outcome of the suppression of the groups during past several regimes, traditional patterns of dominance based on caste ascription and the stress systematic discriminatory policies that favored the few dominant groups have been challenged by activist groups with ethnic, linguistic, and religious alliance. The further action plan by the government or by the political parties therefore need to
encompass political Article 3 of UNDRIP, social and economic problems of the indigenous people. These plans should not only include the aspects of socio-economic development of the indigenous people, but also recognize their culture, religion, and language at the same pedestal as the dominant culture, and have political right of proportional representation and autonomy in the agenda. The development programs for indigenous people in Nepal should have four objectives: to eradicate social imbalance, to uplift cultural status, to enhance capability of indigenous people, and involve indigenous people in nation building. Indigenous people have organic and symbiotic relationship with the land they inhabit. Many of their social practices equate natural environment, land, forest, and water as a sacred space or entity. They have own designated territories since time immemorial with unique social, economical, and cultural values. Indigenous people are holder and provider of knowledge and resources. The state has to recognize free and prior informed consent and mutually agreed term, and fulfill indigenous people's requirement and respect their community protocol. The Article 32 of UNDRIP states that the indigenous people do not have to compromise their citizenship because of their unique culture and customs. Moreover, the article gives the people the right to determine state structure and policies based on their own local practices. Mr. Chair, as outlined in Article 3 and 32 UNDRIP, the objectives of priority programs of indigenous people and are the ethos of indigenous people's movement are to establish social equality and justice, to promote indigenous people's culture, enhance identity, to moreover indigenous people, to utilization and conservation of local resources, and mobilize indigenous peoples through capacity building for national integration. Remarkably, in recent times, Nepal has undergone political and social changes unprecedented in the history. Nepal today is in process of writing a new constitution. Indigenous people of Nepal have been raising their voices for proportional representation, federalism on autonomy on basis of their ethnicity, state restructuring, implementation of secular state, multilingual and cultural policies, indigenous peoples, land rights, implementation of UN instrument like UNDRIP, ILO Convention 169, CBD process, and so on. The indigenous people in Nepal therefore have been finally able to establish their identities and at the national level, and furthermore, they are seeking right through the political injunction by restructuring the state and claiming autonomy on the basis of ethnicity. This could lead to full and effective participation of the state structure. However, the homework does not just end here with the acknowledgement of the indigenous people identities at the national level, unless the state or the key player include the recommendation that empowers the indigenous peoples as outlined in Article 3 and 32 by UNDRIP, the indigenous people, culture, land, language, and religion ever remains in the danger of extinction in coming year. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair, and everyone present today.
Acabamos de escuchar al último orador que teníamos en la lista. Sin embargo, vamos a los hermanos y hermanas que todavía no intervinieron. Vamos a dar más adelante la palabra cuando tengamos tiempo en las otras sesiones. Esta tarde continuaremos con nuestro debate sobre el tema 3. Lo haremos con los estados como está en la agenda. Y el, la sesión comenzaremos, como ya es costumbre, en esta misma sala a las 3 de la tarde. Antes quisiera dar la palabra a la Secretaría, que tiene importantes anuncios que hacer.
Thank you, sir. I was asked to make an announcement that the following announcement. In response to a request from some caucuses for a meeting with the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Issues, the Secretariat will organize a meeting with the caucus chairs and some members of the support group. The request is that the chairs of all the regional caucuses, as well as of the Global Youth and Women's Caucuses, please provide their contact details to Brody Sigurdsson, who is right here in, in this room, and you all know him. He has his arm up with the information. He is from the Secretariat, and he would be assisting you with organizing yourself. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias. Se levanta la sesión.